We do have the copies of the agenda before us. Let me just establish as to whether everybody has the copies of the agenda. Can I assume that that silence says that we all have? Okay. The second issue I want to confirm, there is a latest briefing document that we have been provided for by the ministry. I just want to check whether if all of us have got the same document. You would remember the one that we distributed is just dated January 2012. But the one that would be spoken to is dated the 24th of January 2012. Do we all have this document? We all have. Thank you very much, honorable members. Now, coming to the agenda, we do have three apologies so far. Honorable Chani and Honorable Zimande missed their flights, unfortunately. I won't go much into the details. And then Honorable Dikhale is abroad. So those are the three apologies that we have from members of the committee. I want to make a suggestion. Honorable members, I want to make a suggestion, and well, you'll guide me whether if you're comfortable, that the item that deals with the minutes of the previous meeting and correspondence, that we deal with that item at the end, after the meeting. Are we comfortable with that? Okay, fine. In the light of that, then, let me officially again, once more, welcome the department, of course, under the leadership of the minister, and of course, appreciate the extent to which the minister had responded, because we had requested, of course, for the minister to be present, noting the busy schedule that you are faced with. But the fact that you were able to avail yourself to lead your team, you are heartily welcome. Therefore, let me take the opportunity then to allow the minister. I don't know whether if you are going to introduce your team, and that's the point, Honorable Matila.
No, Chair, in terms of the agenda, because you have just raised two items, and when I go through the agenda, those issues are not on the agenda. I'm not sure if you want us to adopt an amended agenda so that we can deal with those issues. I've got the agenda in front of me here, and issues around the previous minutes and all are not part of the agenda.
They are.
I'm referring to this.
Tabling of 17th January 2012 minutes.
Yeah.
It's here. There's correspondence.
Yeah.
They had.
No, there's one issue you raised. Because that's the issue I want to deal with.
Wait, which one is that?
I just forgot. But that's the issue. I'll
quickly remind you. I requested for the minutes, consideration of the minutes, and of course correspondence to be shifted.
Oh,
for
then I agree.
So that we start with the
an issue that I thought you, when I looked at this agenda as it stands, definitely it indicates that the first point will be the briefing by the minister.
Okay.
The second issue will be, and I thought you were in line with the agenda itself.
Okay. Hold, let me just put it this way. All those procedural, committee procedural matters or administrative matters, let's deal with them at the end. Issues of groups, correspondence, and the minutes of the previous meeting. Agreed. Fine. Let me then give the opportunity to the minister to lead us with the process. We are all yours, Honorable Minister. Sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, for inviting us. Also says I'll take this opportunity. I only arrived at the hours of this morning because we value the work which is done by this important house and particularly this committee. With me here, I've got quite a big, a large team that most of them are familiar, but I'll just introduce a few whom you may have to interact with more frequently. Of course, on my right is Brian, who's the spokesperson of the department, the acting director general, Dennis Domo, Joyce Machile from the foreign branch, Beijing Bili, the legal advisor in the ministry, and Lubuntu, the parliamentary officer. There are a whole lot, including advisors across there. I see Bob will be also interacting with you. Chairperson, since this is the first time I interact with this National Council of Province Ad Hoc Committee, Provinces Ad Hoc Committee, I would like to convey the compliments of the 2012. And really say we offer that we will give our full support to the work of the committee. Of course, 2012 being a very important year in our democracy and or the evolution of our democracy, because we are also saying happy birthday to the African National Congress and all this democratic organization in Africa, and which played a very critical role to consolidate this democracy. Of course, together with working together with all South Africans. I'll start briefly before we go on to the presentation to say what are we seeking to address with this bill. I see I've got a lot of friends here. Others are sitting at the back. Chairperson, what is in our mind when we are presenting this bill to you? What are we seeking to address? The first thing is that in our statute book we've got an old act, Protection of Information Act of 1982, and it poses two problems to continue to have this act in our state too. The first one that because, as you know, we attained our democracy in 1994. And after attaining our democracy, there were a few things we changed in our society, in our parliament, and in our approach to lawmaking. As you know, the national security during the apartheid days was geared in protecting the few, and actually just geared in protection of the state, which was protecting the few. And the first thing we did in 1994, we moved away from that to a broader approach to national security, where we say we want to protect the state and its people. So the people came to the center of our approach to national security for the first time. If you check the white paper on intelligence, the white paper on defense, all of which were developed post-1994 dispensation. And, of course, if you check the provisions then of that act, they are totally different from the ethos we aspire in a constitutional order. You remember classification was just like stamping. The documents classified and they remain classified. And the approach we are introducing now, a coherent and consistent legally sound methods of classification. So it's no more in the hands of officials to just stamp a document, classify. There must be a reason why you're classifying any sensitive information. There must be justifiable reasons our officials now must comply with, other than just stamping and say this is classified. So, in short, Chairperson, we are saying, repeat again, we wanted to introduce a coherent, consistent, legally sound process of classification, reclassification, and more importantly, declassification. Since 1994, my predecessors have been working, setting up commissions to start a process. How are we going to declassify information which no more require protection? And these are the fruits of democracy which we're introducing in our legal system, that now there should be a process of declassifying information which has been protected in the hands of the state. And thirdly, there are currently some legal gaps. It is the duty of the legislature, working together with the executive as we are empowered by the Constitution to uphold national security, to check what are the gaps in our conduct of national security that prevail currently. The first gap is that one of trying to deal with this increasing challenge of espionage, where foreign spies in particular, or people, steal sensitive information in the hands of the state. And it is a challenge which we have to find way of minimizing it. Secondly, we have got a new phenomenon called information peddling, which we don't have the legal basis of dealing with this threat, and yet it is a national security threat. It poses a lot of national security threat because these business people who are involved in this trade, they thrive on peddling or give false information or introduce that false information in the hands of the state. And more than often, it is intended to cause confusion and conflict so that they can keep on delivering the information and getting the money from those they sell this information. So it is closing that gap. Fourthly, it introduces another legal gap which we find difficulties in dealing with, on how do we handle sensitive information in the hands of the court. This really has had a serious problem over the last couple of years, and we are trying to deal with this in to close this gap by ensuring that there's a way of protecting information which is sensitive in the hands of the court until the presiding officer or judge or magistrate decide otherwise. So that's what we are really just putting in the legislation. Fifthly, we are also trying to deal with some of the, this bill seeks to address some of the national problems which are linked to corruption or administrative ineptitude in terms of protecting what is valuable, called valuable information in the bill. This is not sensitive information, it's not classified information, but it's information in the hands of the state which may need protection, but if abused, doesn't harm the individual citizen or concerned. We are talking here about the protection of such information, such as in our identity document, forgery of our birth certificate, falsification of our identity documents, falsification of the information in our company registry, and so on. These crimes which have happened, on the crimes which are associated with these, really affect the citizen very directly. Where you may find that yourself, Jefferson, now you are married to Brian, you see. And Brian is claiming half of your estate, you see. Where you may find all of a sudden, I know you, Jefferson, you are not very empowered financially, that we suddenly find you becoming a multimillionaire by just stealing and falsifying the information at our company register, what we call company hijacking. We have had several prominent cases in this regard, and it is a serious problem. It does affect our citizens. I personally, Jefferson, have interacted with some of those who have been affected with this new crime of company hijacking, because people have got access to that information. All of a sudden, they are directors. They are locating shares, they are selling shares, whereas we are still there as a legitimate owner of the company. So basically, that's what we are trying to address by protecting what is called valuable information in the hands of the state. Quickly, we seek to ensure that the values in the Constitution are also adhered to. As you know, we have our Constitution instructed us to develop a system of ensuring that citizens access information in the hands of the state, and we produce what is called Promotion of Access to Information Act, and also we said that those who are involved in corrupt activities, we produce what is generally known to the public as the Whistleblowers Act or Protected Disclosures Act. So this bill, because it sort of restricts access to information, we had to align it to these two acts. And this bill seeks to ensure that we provide a systematic access to classified information. It doesn't mean that because the information is classified, it will remain permanently inaccessible to our citizens. That's what Jefferson were really trying to deal with in this act. I think also just to mention, because the process in the National Assembly was really elaborate. It took almost 18 months to deal with the bill, and we welcome some of the progressive changes which were made by the members of all parties in the National Assembly. And as we said, we also offer to work closely with you and offer any help on your efforts to improve the bill. What became clear, Jefferson, I'd like to put this point that, of course, this law or proposed law stimulated a lot of interest in our society and the media in general. And we were also listening carefully and also trying to take the positive aspects which comes out of this public engagement. But it became quite clear to us towards the end of the process that despite the work done by Parliament, it was clear that the members of the public were not sure which version of the bill are we dealing with. I think it's going to be very important to ensure that as you go and interact or deal with the bill, that the bill at hand is the bill number 6B of 2010. 6B of 2010. Because a lot of people, they'll come and say, I'm doing because the bill has said. And you say, but the things they are saying, they are no more prevailing in our bill. I think that's going to be important so that we don't make our citizens angry unnecessarily referring to things which we have already changed. I think it's going to be very important that every citizen is given an opportunity to comment on the correct version of the bill. Of course, Jefferson, you are an important institution because you represent the provinces, and which means you are much closer to our ordinary people, the ordinary citizens who can't afford to come to Cape Town, who can't even afford the bus fare to come to Cape Town. And we hope that in your deliberations, you've been taking these into account. And these are just the introductory remarks, Jefferson, that we remain committed to this democracy. We remain committed to listening to all views of South Africans. It doesn't matter how long. It may be our wish that we finalize this bill next week, but it is important that we give the due processes to take into account, because if you check the example I talk about, this old organization, it became strong and survived for 100 years precisely because of allowing the process of engagement, precisely because of allowing the process of consulting not only the few, but the majority of our own people, so that they don't become passive agents in our legislative process. So I thank you very much for inviting me. The Acting Director General is ready to give the details of the presentation so that we can, we have tried to make it quite simple so that we can know what is SHAFTA intends in terms of what the main objectives we have outlined today. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Minister. I would therefore give the opportunity to the acting DG to take us through the process.
Jefferson, honorable members of the ad hoc committee, fellow South Africans, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to emulate the example of the minister by wishing everyone in the house a compliment for 2012. And wish the work of the committee well in considering the bill, B6B of 2010, dealing with the protection of state information. Without any waste of time, Chairperson, I'd like to say that the presentation for today deals with four main issues. The first is to provide a background to the bill and what has happened in the National Assembly. And secondly, to highlight the objectives that the minister has done, just amplify aspects thereof. Thirdly, to provide a brief chapter summary, Chairperson, which has been necessitated by the point the minister ended on, which is that we should make sure that we talk to the same issues and address the concerns that are real. And we will then have a few concluding remarks. By way of background, Chairperson, it is important to point out that since the beginning of the democratic dispensation, various ministers of intelligence services commissioned reviews to improve the management of state information and to align these with the Constitution. The first version of the Protection of Information Bill was tabled in 2008 as a consequence of these reviews. The bill was later withdrawn following deliberations of the then Ad Hoc Committee on the Protection of Information Bill. A revised version was introduced in March 2010 on the 9th of March by the Minister of State Security, and public hearings were held in the National Assembly on the 21st and 22nd of July in 2010. Chairperson, as the Minister has already indicated, after a period exceeding 18 months of deliberations and engagements with a wide variety of stakeholders, the National Assembly on the 22nd of November 2011 passed the Protection of State Information Bill 2010, B6B 2010. The contents of the bill, Chairperson, was approved by all ad hoc committee members, except where they felt there was a weaker provision due to the exclusion of the public interest defense or public domain defense clause. We welcome, therefore, this phase of the lawmaking process here in the National Assembly and hope that it would provide South Africans with another chance to engage in the debate on this bill. As we always say, without fear, favor, or prejudice. What are the objectives of the bill? Adding to what the Minister has already highlighted, he has already indicated that presently in our statutes we've got the Protection of Information Act of 1984, and he has already provided the main reasons have already been highlighted by the Minister. He has really touched on two. First, that it is no longer in keeping with the human security doctrine that we have since adopted as a democratic South Africa. And secondly, that it does not fit consistently with the Constitution. We would also seek to create a statutory framework for the protection of all state information held by organs of state from unauthorized alteration, loss, destruction, and unlawful disclosure in the case of sensitive information. This then would deal with valuable and sensitive information, which are the two components of this bill. It will set out the criteria and processes, as the Minister has already indicated, for classification, reclassification, and declassification. It will also address weaknesses in our legal dispensation. As you would well know, at present, we've got the minimum information security standards that are a cabinet policy document, which is unenforceable in terms of the law, except taking disciplinary action if people are not heeding it. This does not address the needs of our national security environment. There are also inadequate provisions for espionage in our law, and the bill will seek to address these effectively. It will also, as the Minister has already indicated, criminalize information peddling, which would then ensure that the quality of intelligence that we receive will be improved. It will establish guidelines for the treatment of classified information before court. And in keeping with the values in our Constitution, promote transparency and accountability in government while protecting state information to advance, enhance, and deepen national security. The bill, Chairperson, will also provide for a thorough and methodical approach to the determination of which information may be protected without classification, that is, valuable information. It will create a system for the review of classified information and for declassifying information under the supervision of the Classification Review Committee. It will regulate the accessibility of declassified information, mainly available through the National Archive. Allow me, Chairperson, to then move to the preamble of the bill. The preamble of the bill notes that information is important to secure the Republic and may need to be protected, although free flow of information within an open democratic society must be promoted. The bill aims to balance the need to maintain secrecy wherever and whenever it is necessary to do so, while access to information held by the state is continued. The preamble provides that, mindful that the right to access information is embedded in our Constitution, we also must acknowledge that information held by the state may be restricted when necessary for reasons of national security and the protection of citizens against harm. Chapter 1, Chapter 2 deals with, amongst others, definitions in order to guide the interpretation of the contents of the bill, and this is done in keeping with the information principles that are dealt with in Chapter 2. There are various definitions in this chapter, such as the definition of the agency, which refers to the State Security Agency, archive, categories of information, categorization of information, classifying authority, classification of information, and classified information. It also addresses some of the new definitions that have been engineered in order to address the new situation, such as the definition of hostile activity, which is contained in the bill. It addresses information peddling, a new concept which has also not existed in our national security lexicon. The chapter proceeds to define national security, Chairperson. Chairperson, if I may just pause at this point to really make an observation that in the new dispensation we've had very lengthy debates on issues pertaining to national security. We have now, for the first time, as South Africans, arrived at a collectively shared definition of national security during the process in the National Assembly. And what is noteworthy in this definition, Chairperson, is that we have also included what national security is not supposed to deal with, and which is what we have highlighted, that is, it does not include lawful political activity, advocacy, protest, or dissent, as part of ensuring that this paradigm shift towards human security is indeed realized. Furthermore, Chairperson, we have dealt with definitions of state information, state security matter, valuable information, which are some of the critical definitions that are contained in this bill, Chairperson. Importantly, Chairperson, Chapter 1 addresses the object of the Act. And the object of the Act are, amongst other things, to regulate the protection of state information in accordance with the general principles and framework, and at the same time promote transparency and accountability. It also addresses the application of the Act, which I think is a very important and innovative development, Chairperson. And that is that in respect of the protection of valuable information, the bill, when it becomes the Act, will apply to all organs of state. Whereas when it comes to the classification, reclassification, and declassification powers, the bill applies only to the security services as contemplated in Chapter 11 of the Constitution and their oversight structure. Other organs of state may, on good cause shown, be allowed to opt in and to exercise reclassification, declassification, and general classification powers. And this part of the process would cover, in the main, two new innovations. First, the process of opting in will be subject to public input. There would be a publication in the Gazette of this particular aspect. Second, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence will be consulted by the Minister before he actually finalizes this aspect. This issue has really not been properly covered in the reporting that has happened on this chapter. Chapter 2, Chapter 3, then addresses the general principles, and bear with me, because I really would like to read through this section. I actually wanted to read the actual bill when it comes to this, and with your permission, I request to do so, Chapter 3. General Principles of State Information. State information. State information may, in terms of this Act, be protected against unlawful disclosure, destruction, alteration, or loss. Protected information. State information which requires protection against unlawful alteration, destruction, or loss is referred to as valuable information. State information in material or documented form which requires protection against unlawful disclosure may be protected by way of classification, and access to such information may be restricted to certain individuals who carry a commensurate security clearance. General Principles of State Information. The following principles underpin this Act and inform its implementation and interpretation. Unless restricted by law that clearly sets out reasonable and objectively justified public or private considerations, state information should be available and accessible to all persons. State information that is accessible to all is the basis of a transparent, open, and democratic society. Access to state information is a basic human right and promotes human dignity, freedom, and the achievement of equality. The free flow of state information promotes openness, responsiveness, informed debate, accountability, and good governance. The free flow of state information can promote safety and security. Accessible state information builds knowledge and understanding and promotes creativity, education, research, the exchange of ideas, and economic growth. Some confidentiality and secrecy is, however, vital to save lives, to enhance and protect freedom and security of persons, bring criminals to justice, protect the national security, and engage in effective government and diplomacy. Measures to protect state information should not infringe unduly on personal rights and liberties, or make the rights and liberties of citizens unduly dependent on administrative decisions. Measures taken in terms of this Act, Chapter 6, must have regard to the freedom of expression, the right of access to information, and other rights and freedoms enshrined in the Bill of Rights in our Constitution. And they must be consistent with Article 19 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and have regard to South Africa's international obligations. In balancing the legitimate interests referred to in paragraph A to I, the relevant minister, a relevant official, or a court must have due regard to the security of the Republic, in that the national security of the Republic may not be compromised. Chairperson, I thought it was important to do this because when we highlight how central this chapter is to making decisions about classification, anything that is not done in keeping with the spirit of this chapter will clearly be defined and be declared by our court. It's not in keeping with the provisions of the bill and not in keeping with the spirit and provision of our constitution and the international instruments that we've referred to in this chapter. But that's not the end, just the beginning. Chapter 3 provides for policies and procedures. This chapter deals with provisions for the formulation of national standards and procedures. This is also important. It provides for the departmental heads to establish policies, directives, and categories for classifying, reclassifying, and declassification of information subject to the review and oversight of the classification review panel. They don't do it on their own. These policies may not be inconsistent with national policies and should be established within 6 months of the date on which regulations are promulgated. Chapter 3 further provides, Chapter 3, that the head of each organ of state, where applicable, the main, they must establish policies, directives, and categories for classifying, downgrading, and declassifying state information. Chairperson, we thought we should emphasize the issue of downgrading because reclassification does suggest that there can be upgrading. That is, the upgrading part is a very small and restricted part. In terms of the bill, upgrading can only take place to information that has been classified by those who collect information sent to the head office, and when classification is finally determined by the head of the organ of state. The head of the organ of state, because that information would not have been exposed to many people, may decide that the classification given is lower than the information demand. He or she may, under those circumstances, upgrade. But this is a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of the information that would be held. In the main, reclassification comprised of declassification, because you cannot make people unlearn what they already know. If there is a secret that people have had access to by virtue of their security clearance, if you increase the security clearance and the classification, those who already know it will not unknow it by you increasing the classification, and therefore reclassification and upgrading is only applicable to information that has not been widely distributed. I thought that is a very important technical point to make, because there is an impression in the mind of many that this reclassification would be a backdoor of official increasing classifications without being checked upon. Chairperson, it's also going to ensure that there is protection against unlawful alteration, destruction, or loss of state information created, acquired, or received by that organ of state. Chapter 4, Chairperson, deals with valuable information which requires protection. The bill provides also in this chapter for the destruction of documents in keeping with the provisions of the National Archives and Records Service of South Africa Act of 1996 and does not create a parallel system. In section, in clause 8, the future section 8, we address the process of determining state information as valuable, and in clause 9, we provide for the protection of valuable information without using classification as a protection measure. In chapter 6, we provide for classification and declassification of state information. In part A, the bill provides that the following critical areas in the bill be attended to. First, defines the nature of classified information, methods of classification, classification level, and the authority to classify. It proceeds, chapter 3, to address the conditions for classification that I also would like to read word for word from the act, from the bill itself. The decision to classify information must be based solely on the conditions set out in this act. Secrecy is justifiable only when necessary to protect national security. Classification of state information may not, under any circumstances, be used to conceal an unlawful act or omission, incompetence, inefficiency, or administrative error. Restrict access to state information in order to limit scrutiny and thereby avoid criticism. Prevent embarrassment to a person, organization, or organ of state or agency. Unlawfully restrain or lessen competition, or prevent, delay, or obstruct the release of state information that does not require protection under this act. The classification of state information is an exceptional measure and should be conducted strictly in accordance with Section 12. State information is classified only when there is a clear, justifiable, and legitimate need to do so, and a demonstrable need to protect the state information in the interest of national security. No other reason. If there is significant doubt as to whether state information requires protection, the matter must be referred to the relevant minister for a decision. Relevant minister, not one person, it is many, and there cannot be a conspiracy that easily. The decision to classify may not be based on any extraneous or irrelevant reason. Classification decisions must balance openness and secrecy. Scientific and research information not clearly related to national security may not be classified. State information may not be reclassified after it has been declassified and released to the public under proper authority. Classification must be in place only for as long as the protection
is actually necessary. And where there is still a need for classification, it may be that the state information in question no longer requires high-level classification and should therefore be downgraded. Specific considerations with regard to the decision whether to classify state information may include whether the disclosure may A, expose the identity of a confidential source or relevant information about the application of an intelligence or law enforcement investigative method, or reveal the identity of an intelligence or police source when the unlawful disclosure of that source would clearly and demonstrably damage the national security of the Republic or the interest of the source or his or her family. Clearly and demonstrably impair the ability of government to protect officials or persons for whom protection services in the interest of national security are authorized. Seriously and substantially impair national security, defense, or intelligence systems, plans, or activities. Seriously and demonstrably impair relations between South Africa and a foreign government, or seriously and demonstrably undermine ongoing diplomatic activities of the Republic, violate a statute, treaty, or international agreement, including an agreement between the South African government and another government or international institution, or cause life-threatening or other physical harm to a person or persons. The application of the classification condition may not in any way inhibit or prevent officials from informing authorized officials of such information in order to fulfill law enforcement or intelligence functions authorized or prescribed by law. When conditions for classification contemplated in this section no longer exist, state information must be declassified. Chatterson, I have really gone through these provisions because I believe that God lies in the details, as the chairman said. I'm told the Chinese also say angels are in the detail as well. Chapter 10, allow me then to proceed that in Chapter 5, there is also provision for report and return of classified records. If I were to be allowed to pause here and say, this really is a provision for good citizenry. As a good citizen, I always say, Chaplain, when dealing with matters of classification, if us as South Africans were like a colony of bees, getting instructions from the queen bee, there would be no reason to classify because it is only those that belong to that particular circle that are able to receive and transmit the, and carry out the instructions that come from the queen bee. It's different hives have got different methods of communication. So we would not have a problem with South Africans, but unfortunately, we do not have that. So because we don't have that, we have to allow some amongst us to then have access to information. We are not hiding it from fellow South Africans. We are hiding it from hostile individuals and those who are not really interested in protecting and advancing the interests of our country. But if we're able to share it with every South African, there would be absolutely no problem sharing it with every South African, because we're not hiding it from South Africa. We're hiding it from those who are seeking to harm our national interests. And so when information does get into the public domain that does not belong there, it is not a crime for a South African to know that. All we want is that they should help us to protect that information by simply returning it to the police or the National Intelligence Agency. Simple and straightforward. That's all. It's not as complicated as it is sometimes made out to be. If we were in a beehive, this would not be needed as a provision, but we're not. In Chapter 5, Chapter 6, we also provide for classification and declassification of state information. This is covered in Part B of the bill, which deals with declassification in Clause 16 and maximum periods of classification in Clause 17. In Chapter 6, Chapter 6, we provide for regular reviews of classified information. And here, Chapter 6, I just want to pause and say, on an annual basis, there may be annual reviews undertaken because of requests. Number two, there would be 10-year compulsory reviews, which are prescribed by the bill. There would also 20-year reviews, whereupon the head of a department of an organ of state concern would have to demonstrate that there is still a need for the continued classification of that information, otherwise the information would have to be declassified. With your permission, therefore, I proceed to highlight that Chapter 6 provides for access to classified information. Again, here, Chapter 6, I believe this is the first in the world, in that the bill provides that when using the Promotion of Access to Information Act to request access to information, and the officer concerned discovers that the information in question is classified, the bill provides that the person must not go back and tell the requester that, sorry, the information is classified. But what the person who gets that information must immediately and automatically apply on behalf of the requester for the review of the status of classification of the said information, and the determination be made on whether access would be granted or not to that information. This is a new provision, and I am told that it seeks to put us on a proactive basis when dealing with requests for access to information which does not exist elsewhere in the world. So in Clause 19, which deals with this procedure, Chapter 6, for access to classified information, given that classification is not a reason for denial of access, it fast-tracks and aligns the bill with the Promotion of Access to Information Act. There is a clause there which provides for public interest override. Public interest override. Public interest override. Public interest override. Override. And that means, Chapter 6, if there is any information that violates the conditions for classification, if it is pertaining to the breaking of a law, and that information is classified, this provision obliges the head of the organ of state concern to declassify within 14 days if it pertains to an imminent public danger, as the honorable member said, and make sure that it is action timely. This, again, is an innovation, Chapter 6. It provides also that if this is information that is not in the danger of being destroyed and pertains to wrongdoing but is not urgent in nature, it should be availed within a period of 30 days. But here is the operative provision, Chapter 6. If it is dealing with wrongdoing and is classified,
the head of an organ of state does not have a discretion. He or she is obliged by this list to declassify and to avail that information. This is not in the discussion that's currently taking place outside this hall, and we want to put it in this hall, Chairperson, because it's a very important. So there is no discretion. If there is wrongdoing and the information is classified, first, it does not meet the conditions for classification. So it is wrongfully classified. A crime has already been committed, and therefore, to deal with it must be declassified, and obviously, we are all obliged as heads of departments to report wrongdoing to the police. And so too, as South Africans, we know of any breaking of the law. Chairperson, so the clause, the detail of the clause then addresses that. Chairperson, another theft for South Africa. Under normal circumstances, you are expected, if you believe that there is something wrong, to go to the court and to follow the set procedure. We have said here because we want a user-friendly system, a system that will help us combat corruption. That if anybody knows of any information that is about to be destroyed, for example, that is classified, they don't need to meet the time frame. The court may, when they show that there was a justifiable reason for them to take such action, the court may condone the non-observance of the time period referred to in subsection 4A on good cause shown where an urgent application is brought before court. We believe that anybody who believes that a delay by one more day might bring the information into mortal danger, may be destroyed. They can go to court without having to observe the time period provided for in the bill. The court may condone that in order to ensure that it decides on whether access should be granted or not to that information. Chapter 7, Chapter 10, is also another innovation which provides for the classification review panel. The chapter deals with the function, the constitution, the membership, the decision, appointment, accountability, and reporting of the classification review panel. Chairperson, it must be emphasized that the panel's main function would be to ensure compliance with the bill by organs of state that exercise the powers of classification, reclassification, and declassification of state information. Its independence and various powers allows it to ensure that government remains accountable to Parliament for the decision that government makes. Its functional independence derives from being nominated by members of the public, being shortlisted by members of the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, and approved by the National Assembly, and then the appointment is made by the minister in keeping with the decision of the National Assembly. This guarantees functional independence. It builds in checks and balances in the operation of this classification review panel. The panel, Chairperson, will exercise an oversight function along similar lines as those exercised by the Auditor General of the Republic. The panel is obliged to prepare an annual report on its activities and to submit such report to Parliament and to publish such a report to
to fulfill the accountability and allow for public scrutiny. So they will not, as members of the panel, once appointed, then be free of scrutiny themselves. If you want to ask the question, who is going to supervise the supervisor, the answer we will give is that the South Africans in their 49 million will have that responsibility through these public reports that would be availed and through various processes that would be put in place for engagement. The publication, Chairperson, of the annual report seeks to provide insight to the public on the work of this esteemed body, the Classification Review Panel. In Chapter 8 of this bill, the bill provides for appeal. The chapter contains the procedure to be followed when lodging an appeal in case of refusal of access to information. This process is identical to the one in the Promotion of Access to Information Act. So any person who is refused access to information in terms of this act may appeal to the relevant minister of the organ of state concerned. The section also deals, Chairperson, with the procedures for application to court to provide for relief. A requester is empowered to go directly to court to lodge an urgent application without exhausting internal appeal procedure. Chairperson, in Chapter 9 of this bill, we address the transfer of records to the National Archives and the release of declassified information to the public. The chapter provides for the procedure to be followed in this regard and underlines that no classified state information may be made available to the public until such state information has been declassified. Declassified information may then be made available to the public through avenues in the Promotion of Access to Information Act or any other law that allows access to state information. Chapter 10 deals with the implementation and monitoring of the implementation of this bill, chapter. The state security agents will monitor the implementation of the act and must provide all organs of state and ministers with support and advice on the handling and review of classified information. The South African Police Service, the South African National Defense Force are responsible for doing so in their own department. Chapter 11 addresses offenses and penalties. One of the advisors of the minister always say, if you do crime, you must do time. This part of the bill addresses that chapter. The chapter contains all the offenses and punishments which may be imposed on people convicted of offenses under the bill. The penalties are severe to serve as a deterrent. The following offenses are provided for, amongst others. Now, Chairperson, we'd like to emphasize that every country that we know of, bar our own, usually has got adequate counter-espionage measures and has got very strong legal provisions in that regard. Very, very strong provisions in that regard. We pray for saying. So, we request to ensure that to unlawfully and intentionally, please, one, unlawfully, two, intentionally, communicate, deliver, or make available state information classified top secret, which the person knows or ought reasonably to have known would directly or indirectly benefit a foreign state. Second aspect, to unlawfully and intentionally, these are very important elements of the crime, make, obtain, collect, capture, copy a record containing state information classified top secret, which the person knows or ought reasonably to have known would directly or indirectly benefit a foreign state. These are very crucial elements of the crime in the bill. Foreign state, intentionally, unlawful. So if you lawfully or you unlawfully but unintentionally, then, you know, the crime has not been committed. The elements must all be there. And it is up to the state to prove that those elements are there. That's very important. We then go on, Chapter 3 in this chapter, to deal with the disclosure of classified information. Whistleblowers are adequately protected in line with the provision of this Act. I am gracefully reminded by the minister here that, you see, for each level of classification of the espionage offense, there is a different penalty. For confidential information, the penalty is at a given level. For secret information, it's a little bit higher than confidential. And of course, for the highest of high, 25 years. Only 25 years. Only. You know? Only. For top secret. It's up to, okay. So I stand corrected. Only a minister is emphasized 15. May I chaperson with your permission? Then
maybe acting teacher, just for the purpose of memory,
yes.
For the appellant.
Yes.
Under the espionage
offensive,
the Act.
May I read that?
You may not necessarily read that.
Okay.
But let's check your line. You say the 15 up to 25 will be your top six. We know
yes.
It as top six.
Yes.
And then for those offenses, 10 not exceeding 50, what would that be?
Secret.
Secret.
Yes.
And then the last one?
It's confidential, it's 5 to not.
That is now confidential.
Yes. Okay. Not exceeding 10.
Okay.
Yes.
No, thanks. You may proceed.
I thank you, Chaperson. Chapter 11, Chaperson, as I said, then deals with these offenses. Now, please don't forget my example, honorable members of a beehive. I really like that example because really if we were in a beehive, we would not have a problem. Now, why do we classify these things? Because it's very important. So we make receiving state information unlawfully a crime. Because we have already provided, if it comes to you, and you give it to the police, nothing happens to you. Nothing. If you get it, remember, there are three elements to the crime. Unlawfully, intentionally, do those things. So, you would, by giving it to the police, demonstrated that you have no unlawful intention of keeping the information, which we are not supposed to have access to. So, receiving state information unlawfully is a crime. Hostile activity are provided for as offenses. Interception of or interference with classified information, disclosure of classified information, provision of false information to national intelligence structures, again, is a crime. Destruction or alteration of valuable information is a crime. Improper classification is also a crime. The prohibition of disclosure of state security matter is also aimed at enhancing national security, and therefore not assisting in that regard is a problem. Chapter 12, Chairperson, as the Minister already indicated, provides for the protection of information before court. The chapter protects classified information before court until the court decides whether it should be made available or not. Chapter 13 is a chapter dealing with general provisions and caters for reports to be furnished. It empowers the minister and relevant ministers, if I remember well, to make regulation, the minister to make regulations, contains transitional arrangements, and repeals the Protection of Information Act of 1982 and other acts. In concluding, Chapter 3, South Africa is a young and fledgling democracy that is built on the foundation of a constitution that recognizes various fundamental human rights central to the advancement of peace, security, and prosperity, amongst other values. Guided by the noble tenets of the Constitution, this bill, as the Minister has already indicated, seeks to balance the need to maintain secrecy whenever and wherever it is necessary to do so, while guaranteeing the right of access to information held by the state. Adequate safeguards, Chairperson, have been built into the bill to prevent abuse, provide oversight and public scrutiny and accountability. Importantly, an additional layer of oversight, the Classification Review Panel, is being established to collaborate with the parliamentary oversight done by the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, civil monitoring by the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence, judicial oversight through the Inspecting Judge on Interception, executive oversight by the Minister of State Security and other responsible ministers. We welcome, Chairperson, the opportunity given to the Department of State Security by the committee and the public at large to present this submission, introducing the bill, which would help the NCOP to determine to what extent this delicate but necessary balance between openness and secrecy has been achieved in this bill. To you, Chairperson, and to the committee and all those who are part of this process, and the permission granted by the Minister, I thank you all.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Minister, and of course, the Acting GT. It's a pity that, you know, I just received a note that the Minister and the Acting GT wished us all the best for 2012. and we did not say thanks and you too. So on behalf of the committee, you too, thank you very much. Probably because of we started the year on a very high note. So we thought that maybe it's June already. Okay. Then is the opportunity for members now to engage with the presentation. There was the political overview, and of course the details presented by the acting chief. I'll take two on my right, two on my left, and then we'll take Honorable Worth, followed by Honorable Bloom. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair, and first of all I'd like to say thank you to the Minister and his department for presenting the outline of this bill here today. And I also liked a bit about the beehive, you see, and the queen bee, because if the queen bee was here, I don't know what the queen bee would think of this bill, but you know, if you irritate the queen bee, you normally get stung severely. So just with that, I'd like to let you know. What I would like to know is, I don't know if any of the state law advisor is here. What is the state law advisor's opinion of this bill? Has he signed this off? And what does he think of the constitutionality with regard to the bill as it stands in view of what is perceived by a lot of the public, the very weak public interest section in the bill? Thank you.
Thank you. To assist the committee so that we don't get back to this issue of the state law time. There is someone who's standing in for the deployed person. She's got some other engagement. But let's use the opportunity to clarify ourselves as members of the committee, where there would be a need for us to engage with the state law advisors. But and then that time will come. But also we must bear in mind that the state law advisor is here to advise us. In actual fact, it's for the state. It's for the state. It's not advising us as members of parliament to advise our own court. So if we allow the state law advisor and the state law advisor says no, it's absolutely correct, then what? So let's not put the state law advisor in a difficult situation now. Let's use the opportunity as committee members, as members of party, to clarify. To seek clarity, seeking questions, or make your comments when you find it necessary. So, I have Honorable Bloom.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and same to you, Minister, and everybody who have wished us well. Thank you very much. Chairperson, the Minister has said in his address that the ANC, that's the culture of the ANC, to listen to people. That's why the ANC have survived for more than 100 years now. Now, I will submit that was the old ANC, not the new ANC. Because let me tell you, Minister, I'm coming to my question. I'm coming. Don't get irritated. I'm coming. You see, Minister, over this, since this bill was introduced to Parliament, everybody, religious bodies, everybody was screaming up until now. Now, I am saying, if the ANC is listening to people, listen to the voice of the people. I understand we are going to public hearings now, and that's very great. I hope that the ANC, you as a member of the ANC.
I thought that by allowing you those few seconds, you'll come back and preoccupy yourself with what you are doing as a parliamentary committee. The minister is here representing the executive. Okay? And we now, as that branch, that strategic branch that does oversight over the executive, now it's an opportunity to engage with the executive. We are not receiving a representation or presentation from the ANC. It's a presentation from the Department of State Security. So let's engage with the minister in that aspect. Let's leave out the ANC. Not unless the minister, the member wants to make a proposal. That the ANC, we must call the ANC so that the ANC must come and respond on it.
Chairperson, you see, we are responding to the comments, the presentation by the minister and by the acting DG. I don't think that I'm out of order.
Honorable Bloom. Honorable Bloom. The minister wished the ANC well in his 100 years. He never said, I'm presenting you on behalf of the African National Congress. He just wished the ANC well, which is a fact. You can't dispute that. You can also deny him an opportunity to do that. Can we please focus ourselves on what we're supposed to do?
Chairperson, I am insisting. The minister has said that the ANC, that's why the ANC survived for 100 years.
Honorable Bloom, for the purpose of this exercise, can I not allow you an opportunity to engage with the ANC processes and instead focus on the presentation that we received, which is the act?
Chairperson, I am saying, I am commenting on what the minister said. I'm coming to my question.
Can you get to that?
I am going to my question.
Please,
now.
Do so.
Now, my question is, must I ask it to you or to the minister?
Ask me then if there's something that is irrelevant to what the minister said. You are welcome to ask me.
I'm coming to the question. Minister or DG, you know, setting up of this panel, review panel, will it not be necessary to engage or to appoint independent people, not part and parcel of any state body? Let me make an example of religious people and whatever and whatever. That's my first one. The second one is the declassification of ministers, the different ministers. Who can decide or who can classify information? Will that not be a dangerous issue to leave that thing to an individual minister? I'm asking this question for clarification. Are you saying all the ministers, executive ministers, from the executive, must classify or declassify information? Thanks. That's my... Chairperson, that was my question.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Tonami.
Thank you, Chair. Like the minister, I will also wish the ANC very well in the coming years. And of course, it still has to exist. Particularly for individuals like the one who spoke up just before me. Then, Chair.
No.
Am I out of order? Oh, okay. No, Chair, I also want to say we were quite grateful to the media for the attention we got in this committee today. I wish you could do this with all the committees of the National Council of Provinces, not only because of this bill, but all other provinces. But then also, Chair, try and make sure that our members understand. And I'm now responding to a question posed earlier. I'm not the minister, though. That state law advisors, whoever else, this is not a new bill. We are not receiving a briefing on a bill that's being introduced here now. this is a continuation of the process that started in the National Assembly. So I hope honorable members will understand that. Well, that's where this whole confusion is going to come from. And the media also must understand that we're not starting a new process here. We're continuing from the National Assembly, and we are now almost at the tail of this bill. So anything you've lost, you've lost. You may win, God knows. But from the department, I would have wanted to get to know, when they were with the National Assembly, which parts of the bill were they told by the dissenting voices that these are unconstitutional in the bill? Because we are now looking at a bill that comes from the National Assembly. So if we could be told, so that we look at those areas as well. According to what both the minister and the acting DG said, it is said that there was almost agreement on every other thing, except this one part. Where is that part? And how did you deal with it before we also engage? And then, Chair, some members, or this one honorable member, spoke of the unconstitutionality. I wish you could get to know which clause or clauses or part or a part that is unconstitutional. And lastly, on the I didn't think we would amend everything in the bill, but on the review panel, honorable minister and your DG, if the JSCI is made up of members from the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, I don't understand why you would say the National Assembly will do this, the National Assembly must do that. So I am already proposing an amendment, because here it must say Parliament. If your process here is in Parliament, so should every appointment and every other thing that has to do with the panel and whatever. The appointed Parliament will then look at those, not the National Assembly. Because there's a difference between this panel and what would be a body that is within the Chapter 9 of the Constitution. They are completely different. So we should treat them the way they are in the Constitution as well. So on that one, I will disagree with you, Minister. Thank you very much.
Matila.
No, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I think I was covered, but I want to reemphasize some of the points that have been put. Because I thought when we get this particular briefing, as my chief whip has just indicated, that you will, you know, because there have been these noises from the media, and not necessarily from the people of South Africa, but foreigners. Because that's what we got in the media. Because, you know, that is the situation. As to the areas that they indicated that this bill is unconstitutional or there are problems with this particular bill, you know. And I'm trying to reemphasize that, because if we can deal with that particular portion, we are able to can move forward. But I must also indicate, Honorable Minister, that, you know, everywhere else I move with Member Bloom, he will always indicate that 100% his blood is ANC, and therefore, if he refers to the new ANC, he's referring to himself. Thank you.
Ngiyabonga Tsalo. Minister Kwele, siyabonga ukuthi nawe ufike namhlanje ube nathi umakhelwane wasekhaya. Siyabonga. Mr. Chairman, having thanked the Minister, I need to thank the Acting DG Zoma for his presentation as well. Now, Minister, in your opening remark, you talked about the increasing espionage and the need to have mechanisms to deal with it. Now, it was reported in the Business Day on the 17th of November that you were quoted as saying, those who oppose the bill are proxies for foreign spies, espionage. Now, if this is sensitive information that's been stolen, and you were quoted as saying that foreign nations are funding the protesters at local proxies, Business Day 17th to 11th, were you, Minister, referring to the Right to Know campaign? What evidence do you have which supports this view? And is the organization Right to Know and others under surveillance by the security agencies, the state security agency? Mr. Minister, the question of information peddling, which also kind of falls into this. Now, the term peddling is used in the presentation, but I don't find it in the bill. Section 45, I think, is the section which you refer to. But it implies that the when you refer to peddling, that they're transactions. And are you saying that peddling now is legal? In other words, I can open a business and peddle information because this act, this bill, hasn't become an act. In other words, is it legal now, and you need this bill to make it illegal? And if so, it could be quite a good business opportunity for us. Chairman, I'll leave it at that for now, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think some of the members have raised the issue about the foreign interest in this. I've read in one of the Free State newspapers this week that there is some foreigners that's protesting against this bill. All I want to know is, why is foreigners involved in this bill? What is their interest in it? To me, I find it very strange that foreigners engage in a domestic issue. And if we are trying to do the same in the United States or wherever country you get into trouble, you get thrown into jail. So I want to know from why is there such an interest from foreigners in this bill. But let me... The issue raised by the Honourable Chief Whip, I think that's the issue that I was also going to raise. But I will leave it at that. I will also support the issue around the role of the NCOP in this. It cannot just be the NA, it must be Parliament as well. But another issue that I want to strongly raise here is Clause 48, is the failure for it of organs of state. Now, I find that a two-year penalty is too little. What is the rationale behind this? Because if you talk information peddling, we talk big business. And you'll find that some people will, you know, find it economical to go and sit in jail for 2 years and then come out and do the same thing. So I've got a problem with it, but I just want to know, what is the rationale behind just only 2 years imprisonment? Thank you.
Any other question before I allow the Minister? Honourable Chief Zodali.
Thanks, sir. That's for clarity to you. Do we allow, are you going to allow members to really be out of order? And because you see, that's not taking us forward. I want to know what's the process for it. If I, for instance, am quoting on what I said in a podium in the House, what has that to do with what we are doing here now?
I thought that I must not engage myself with that because of the capable capacity or the capacity that the minister has to respond to that question, or to that comment. I think the minister has got the capacity to respond to that. But of course, I mean, it does not mean that we must be unruly, wanting to take take the committee program or activity in a negative direction and does not assist the committee. But I know there are able to people in the form of the minister and the acting DG to deal with some of these things. Any, or should I allow the DJ to, and the minister? But maybe just before I allow the minister and the acting DJ, just to concretize the thing of the parliament versus national assembly, so that we don't even have a debate on. The Constitution is quite clear in terms of how it defines parliament. National Assembly, National Council of Government. Because, you see, in some instances it says parliament, and then in some instances it says National Assembly. So that's inconsistent. Can you just agree that that consistency must prevail? Where we say, on matters that had got to do with this bill, it must say parliament. Because in some, like I say, in some instances in the presentation it speaks of parliament, others it speaks of the National Assembly. The second issue is chapter 5, section 14, subsection A. Just underline 30 on the original bill, not the presentation. It says that if there is classification must be in place only for as long as the protection is actually necessary. Now, the question that comes to my mind is, to what extent do you determine the necessity? How do you then arrive at the conclusion of saying it is still necessary and it is no longer necessary? Because in some instances, I can't just remember where in the bill reference is made to yes and the destruction or destruction of information and so forth. Now, what happens if information after 20 years or 30 years, the head of organ of state feels that no, it's still necessary? How do we determine the necessity of that classification? I think for now, let's then allow the minister and the acting DG to then respond to questions and comments, of course, made.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll respond to general issues and some of the more detailed specific issues the officials that I think will respond to. Just to say, the state law advisors, when you introduce any bill as government, we send that bill to state law advisors, and they did certify the bill. And we didn't end up there. The state law advisors' office was always at the assistance of the committee whenever it was necessary to assist them draft or change or question certain legalities of the bill. My brother, you ended up saying that the design of particularly in view of the weak public interest provision. And as we have heard Dennis next to me mentioning, there are very strong public interest provisions in this bill, particularly public interest override. The issues which are of dispute are very minute, and they pertain to public defense. If you have noticed, Dennis will come and explain these matters later on. He emphasized public interest override several times to drive this point so that it is put correctly, but he'll come back to, because some questions relate to what is outstanding. Comrade Bloom,
you know, I'd like to engage you on these issues, but because of time, I'll concentrate to issues pertaining to the bill. I think, Chairperson, we're here as Parliament composed of different parties, but when it comes to national security in any state, we tend to observe one thing, that we converge, because there's something which is supposed to be a public good, which is something which is supposed to serve all of us. But about the ANC, in particular, you refer to it, and the ANC is still the same ANC, but our own body's members, because there are many people who utter similar statements like you. Others talk of ANC of the truly different from the state ANC. If you have listened to the president of the ANC, because I'm not coming here representing the ANC, and follow the speech, you should have seen that it's still the same.
Not a point of order. There's a point of order, not a
point of order.
I hope the... No, let me finish, because I listen to you. Honourable member, if
you
for the point of order, I'll call.
Chairperson, you have called me to point of order when I was raising that issue of the ANC.
Can you
please call the minister also to
order? Okay. No, but I agree. I said I didn't want to speak about the ANC, but you can't just come here and take the ANC and expect us to fold our arms. And we'll engage outside here because we don't want to derail the important work of this committee. In terms of the independence of the review panel, I think Dennis has outlined this, but I'll allow him to elaborate because I think there's still some confusion. they've set out the criteria. This was one of the innovations of this parliament to improve on the previous version of the bill. And if you may like, it was one of the innovations of this 100-year-old organization, I won't mention, with the assistance of others, of course, the input from all other parties helped very much to constitute this important check and balance structure called the review panel. It was only introduced, not because we thought the bill was unconstitutional, to enhance the constitutionality of the bill in ensuring that it is in line with what the Constitutional Court has been saying, we must have review structure, check and balance mechanism in our legislation of this type. So, but the committee then defined who qualifies to be the member of this committee. And I won't engage in that debate and I'll allow the members to liberty to engage on that, but if I remember very well, it was people with some understanding of legal and constitutional things, some understanding of national security, because just those are very critical elements to balance when you're in this committee, and so on. But I'm sure the joint spending committee, which is a joint committee of this parliament involving both the NZOP and the National Assembly will really apply their minds when it's selecting the members which need to be considered by the House for recommendation for appointment. I'll ask Dennis because there seems to be confusion about these ministers who are classifying. And if you can just detail who's got the responsibility to classify, declassify, and reclassify. Definitely it's not the minister, my comrade Blue. The next question was which parts of the bill are considered unconstitutional? We said in my introductory remark we're a listening organization and a responsive organization in this government. While we strongly believe there was nothing really intended to be unconstitutional in the provisional, original bill, But we listen very much to public debate, to public submissions which were made to the committee. And we responded twice in the National Assembly, and also saying these are the areas where we think there are improvements. And all those were done. Maybe just to mention, because we're past this thing, but people keep on dragging to us. The application of the bill to all organs of state was viewed as problematic. The use of national interest as a basis for classification was considered to be problematic. The broadness of certain provisions of the bill, including this one I'm talking about, were considered to be problematic, not unconstitutional. But in the national interest, we said, let's consider these so that we can take, because it's very important when you are dealing with national security bills that you take all stakeholders, all South Africans, not just narrow political interests, into account, because it's supposed to be a public good. One of the areas where we considered that we should narrow, because this thing of national interest, we have not really reached an agreement. Not that there's anything with national interest. As South African, as a young democracy, we have not reached an agreement what is our national interest. It's something we're still engaging and debating as South Africans, and we felt that using such concepts where there's been no distillation of clarity won't be appropriate. And we removed them and we narrowed it to national security, because there is general consensus among us what is national security of South Africa. We may come back to this in 10 years, 20 years to come, once we have distilled the issues of what is our national interest as South Africans. I'm saying this here because me, Siyabonga Tswele, my national interest will be to build a national democratic society which is non-sexist, non-racial, united. And whereas Bloom may have a totally different aspect and approach to this. And we accept that we have not reached that level. You remember there were issues concerning commercial information protection. We remove all those in terms of trying to narrow towards national security away from the national interest or other interests such as commercial interest. So those were the critical changes which were made to ensure that there is no doubt of the intention or the constitutionality of the bill. I hope Ms. Banambi have assisted. There are two minor issues, as I said, which became some bone of contention in the National Assembly towards the end. All parties, and we really thank the parties, because it's nice when you see parties working together in the national interest. Like you said, they agreed, and it's not me saying it, even the opposition parties, but they agreed in 99% of cases, except this public interest defense, and what was called by another friend in the National Assembly, public domain defense. I'll ask Dennis later on to just explain these things and why we remain concerned that we should move towards that approach. I think at this stage also, because these were the things which occupy the public space in terms of the debate towards the end of the process in the National Assembly. The questions about the which committee should approve the review panel, that was a decision of the National Assembly. I think really it's something we should have to engage and clarify. I don't think the intention was to say we minimize the National Council of Provinces. There was never such intention. There was never such a debate. It was in line, because it's not the first structure which is appointed by the National Assembly. It is in terms of our constitutional framework, which competencies the National Council of Provinces have, and which competencies the National Assembly have. That was only consideration. I think we have to engage on the matter because based on those lines, and we will also be seeking counsel and guidance from this committee, because I think those are the issues which you clearly consider. You must remember, I'm also the member of this council, so I am very sensitive to any issue which I was one of the first members of this council, which will undermine the council because it's got a very critical and important role in our democracy. I see in this house there are only two senators. I'm also the only good thing being a senator, you become a senator for life. So I'm a senator together with Honorable Bloom. But I will say, Shepherdson, let's discuss this matter and along those lines, because there was, in my own understanding, and checked with my officials, there was never intention to undermine this council. The increasing espionage and the business day, Nganwa, Yabona Rimina, Angi, Kulumi Namape. Mengikhuluma ngiyayikhulumela nje ngqo. Le nkulumo ngayenza lapha kule ndlu kuthiwa yi-National Assembly. I didn't make a press statement on this issue. I made a speech in the National Assembly. And I didn't call any organization, even including one you have mentioned, a proxy of the foreign spy. My speech said, as South Africans, maybe we should report that my speech said, I paraphrase it, you will not find, let me start here, there are few people who may feel very aggrieved by this speech. The first group of people, I think, will feel aggrieved are the corrupt officials who hide their maladministration through stamping. That we're stopping that. The corrupt officials who deliberately sell sensitive state information to foreign states, knowingly, for their own personal benefit at the detriment of all of us as South Africans. So we've closed that. We're closing or we're attempting to close that. So they won't feel hate to those people. What is the second category of people I personally think they won't feel hate? Those foreign spies who have found it so easy to access sensitive state information, they won't find it easy. But they won't say, I'm coming to make presentation to you as this committee as a foreign spy. But they won't be happy because if I'm a foreign spy, I need to get information. That's how I get assessed in my own country, how much I can get that information. That's how spies work all over the world. So if any legislation which makes my work harder wouldn't be nice to me. The third category of people who may not be happy are those we call information peddling, in literal terms, but spreading falsified information or fabricated information. Because it's business to them. But you won't find people coming here making presentations to you and say, I'm an information peddler. Yes, I'll come to that question. So it was in that context, Honorable Member, I said, you won't find people marching in the streets of Cape Town saying, I'm a foreign spy protesting against this bill. That's how I put it to the National Assembly. How the business bill or other newspapers interpreted or misinterpreted that I can't comment on that. But you can go as a member of parliament to listen and check those records of the National Assembly. That's exactly. I'll give you my speech because I didn't deviate from it in that regard. I'll make sure Brian has please give Umakelwane Mkhaya Bazamba. The question is, why are we trying to legislate on information peddlers? Because it's not correct, but it's not illegal. It is not illegal at the moment. And as we have shown when we're making presentation on the peddlers, this thing is just growing. It's a growing cancer, and we don't have the legal status to deal with it. Kusukela ngo 1998, you remember the popular report, Mary, and other reports which followed thereafter, which were clear reports of information peddling to cause problem for our state and problem for our nation and problem for our people. So these were serious reports, and I'll really also ask the members to share the summaries of these reports with the member, because I know the member knows that they are serious. But the unfortunate thing, we don't have, while they may be immoral, wrong, but they are not illegal in South Africa. And when you are dealing with people who are doing wrong things, all the wrong things, if you want to deal with them legally, you must make them illegal. Then you can really take them to court and process them in court. Hey, why the foreign interest? I think I've partly covered it. But it's not we don't think the foreign interest only in the negative side. Because what we do here in South Africa may impact on what the other countries may be forced to do. We may be setting precedents, is good or bad. So that's how we take this massive interest. When I saw a lot of my foreign colleagues here representing the ambassadors, I don't see them. They are coming here as bad. Because we also learn from the experiences of other countries. We learn because some of them are older democracies, much older than us. We are only 17, 18-year-old, others are more than 100-year-old, you know, these democracies. So we have to learn to them and learn how they've dealt with these challenges. And when South Africa does things, because we are also respected by these countries, it may be positive for them, it may also be very negative for them, because we're setting these good and bad precedences. In this respect, Chairperson, let me put this, because it's been written a lot in the media, and we're not the people who respond to media frequently, because we just focusing on issues of national security. There's been some misinterpretation of what is presented in the National Assembly as international experiences, and to extend that, we falsified the information and we misled the committees in the National Assembly. I'd like to reiterate, Chairperson, that we stand by what we said in the National Assembly in terms of the international experience. You remember we were requested, we didn't just do it on our own, we were requested by the committee in the National Assembly to come and present on the best national experiences in relation to certain aspects of this deal, but that those areas which were contentious. And we did that, and we presented, and we stand by what we said. Because not a single bit did we mislead the National Assembly. We presented everything, and we still stand that those who are calling for the public interest defense, we don't see such experience anywhere in the world, including in Canada, where it is a limited procedure because they don't have, they didn't have protected disclosure there for those working within the security establishment to be able to do, like in our case, in Protected Disclosures Act, to uplift the matters when they are pertaining to classified information. So we stand by our statement in that, Chairperson, and we won't change. other details, really, there were quite a lot of details about these outstanding issues pertaining to classification and clause 48 in terms of the sentences. Dennis will deal with them in detail. Even in the National Assembly, we said on the issue of sentences, if there's one thing the cabinet applied its mind was this thing of the threat caused by the threat to our national security. And we chose a route of putting minimum sentences. I think there's general agreement on that. Minimum and maximum sentences. And we said, we are saying even the officials who breach this law, who classify wrongly, do all these things we say, they mustn't be done. I think Dennis was very detailed, reading one by one of them. Things which must be done and things which must not be done in terms of this act. We said even those officials who do wrong things must be punished. And the committee in the other house felt it may alter. We said we are open. We are open to that regard. If Parliament which may have a final say, but as long as those officials are appropriately punished, like we are saying, the punishment does not be a one punishment. That's why we are having categories depending on the severity. I think also, if you want to understand the context of these staggered punishments, 15 years, 10 years, 5 years, or 2.5 years to 5 years, it must be linked to the severity of the impact of that crime. It is important to, or it is important for members, and also in which section, Dennis, what do we mean by top secret? What do we mean by secret? What would be the impact? Because the impact of those crimes are determined in those determinations. I always use a simple way of dealing with it. You know, if you breach is of top secret, that information is leaked. You know, you can cause the death of the state. It's like chopping your head off as a state, you know. It may be irreversible damage. And if it is severe, it's like injecting poison in your heart. You may survive, but you may not survive too, you see. The confidential is like chopping your hand. You need your hand to function, but you may still continue to function with other ones and without both hands. So, but it is very important to understand the impact of which is imposed by this classification, because when our officials are sitting down, they look at all those general principles, those conditions, they balance those. Then when they say, now, what level should I give this? They should give reason why they think this thing is top secret. They must do it in writing. We hope that will clarify those things in regulation. So that when Bloom is no more a DG and was a DG classifier, we must then look at the reason he put why he said this thing needs top secret protection rather than secret protection. I'll stop there at the moment, Chairperson, and allow the rest of the general or any other officials to go over some of the details of the master cover. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Minister. Dennis?
Hey, Chairperson, the Minister covered a lot of these things.
there's very little scope for me to say anything. But I just thought, Chairperson, when I was listening to the comments being raised, that if you permit me and the minister concurring, I think I should just briefly speak to the business process aimed at the alignment of the promotion of access to information, so that you at least have got a picture. And then I will show how this integration deals with different parts, and then conclude with a few observations which I hope would then answer the questions more comprehensively and facilitate engagement on the content of the piece. I hope we have the process. May I? Okay. I'm not quite sure. Can you just put 100 and 200? I hope you can see. Let me just start by saying access to information that is held by the state in South Africa will be dealt with in keeping with the provision of the Promotion of Access to Information Act. The Act, the Promotion of Access to Information Act, provides for a process for the request of access to information. So it doesn't matter what kind of information, classified or not, valuable or not, that is held by the state. The door towards accessing that information is the Promotion of Access to Information Act. The Act provides for three kinds of information. Information that must be given. Compulsory, you have no choice. That information must be given. If it is determined that the compulsory information, which PIA says must be given, is classified, the bill provides for automatic review of the status of classification of that information, provides that that information must be declassified. After it has been declassified, then provided to the person. If for some reason that information is determined by a head of organ of state as not befitting declassification, because remember, all information held by the state requires somebody to read it, who then makes a decision that it meets the criteria or does not meet the criteria spelled out in the Promotion of Access to Information Act. If the person believes that that information which the requester believes must be given is not given, then the requester has got an opportunity to appeal through an internal appeal process, and that is to the relevant minister, who may or may not grant access to that information. If the minister grants the access, the information is classified and then provided. If the minister is not granting access to that information, the requester, who still believes that the information must be accessible, can then go to the court to seek a determination by the court. Again, the court may determine that the information must be provided, in which case the process is the same, you declassify and then you provide that information. But the court might decide that the information is correctly classified, and therefore you must not have access to information, in which case the information will remain protected until destroyed, in keeping with the provision of the National Archives Act. Now, there is another category of information. Remember, we said, all information requires an official to read through it and to determine whether it may or may not be given. If it is... No, wait, it's still on that slide. Now, that is box number two, that is in the middle. If you may give and the person decides that everything is met in terms of the criteria,
then the information is immediately provided. Of course, having declassified and followed the requisite process. For example, well, thirdly, there is information which, in terms of PIA, must not be given. Doesn't matter whether it's classified or available in terms of the deed. If the Promotion of Access to Information Act says that information must not be given, that information is not given. For example, all cabinet documents in terms of PIA are not accessible to the general public unless declassified by it and made available for public consultation and discussion. So this really seeks to show that the bill is actually aligned with the processes in the Promotion of Access to Information Act and addresses the concerns that we understood were raised during the public hearing. Now, there are specific, the next slide, the next diagram, please. Yes, this one, but it's too small. It's too big. Yes. Now, remember that I talked about the public interest override, which the minister referred to in his response. Again, you make a request in keeping with the Promotion of Access to Information Act. It is determined that the information is classified. What then happens if the information in question violates the conditions for classification? There are two processes that the Act, or the bill rather, provides for. The first one is, remember, any information that is classified, when a person requests, they don't know that the information is classified, not so. It is the official who reads the document who then finds that the information is classified, and the innovation was that that official must therefore make an automatic request for the review of the status of this classified status of the information. If the official determines that the information pertains to imminent and serious public safety or environmental risk, they immediately know that they only have got 14 days within which they have to respond to the request. And they have to review and provide that information. This is very important. If you determine as a person reading the document that this information is hiding corruption, and you can see clearly that the document is hiding corruption, you know you've got 14 days within which you must declassify the information and provide it to whoever is requesting access to that information. If you determine as an official that that information is really not quite dealing with corruption, it may or may not, and you're not sure, and you refuse access to this information, there are two routes that the person can follow. Route number one could be to go and do an urgent court interview, because if there's an imminent public or safety danger, if you wait until the 14 days period, the person is not responding, you can then quickly go to court and say, look, I can't wait for 14 days. As the National Assembly was saying, Quebec is about to explode. So we can't wait for it to explode. We need the information. Waiting for longer than these 14 days is not in the national security interest. So please assist us to have access to this information. Then you can do that in court. Now, the court, of course, can say, no, we understand, you thought wrong. Therefore, you do not have the right of access to information. Your access might be denied. If it is not denied, you are then provided with the information in order to ensure that that process is basically expedited. This is to deal with information that has a short lifetime. So, the long internal processes have been short-circuited. There's a possibility of going straight to court if you believe that going to the minister is going to take a longer period of time. So this is to ensure that
the system is responsible. And corruption, maladministration, etc., would not be hidden when it comes to matters of imminent and serious public safety or environmental risk. There is a second part of the information that might be involved. It might just be general corruption, that somebody has married you to somebody else. And then, of course, when the official determines that that has been done, the official has got 30 days maximum period to review and provide the information. This is compulsory. If it is clear that the documents have been falsified, and when you are reviewing this document to come to that conclusion, you have no choice but to provide that information within 30 days. If you are not convinced, of course, he will deny access to that information, in which case, again, there is an option of a person doing an urgent court application or alternative, going through an internal appeal to the relevant minister and then later going to a normal court process if the minister concurs with the ruling of the official. I hope that this helps you to actually have a picture of how these business processes interact with one another. Now, let me then answer some of the specific questions when you've got this picture in mind. I started by emphasizing that an official, the bill provides two main things. First, the authority to classify, and second, the authority to declassify. Both these powers are exercised by a head of an organ of state, not a minister. These powers are exercised by the head of an organ of state and not a minister. In the system, ministers or relevant minister or minister, in each case, it refers to the Minister of State Security. When it comes to the process, the major role they play is one of appeal. They are the appeal authority, both in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act and in terms of the Protection of State Information Act. They are both appeal authorities. In order to ensure that the bill is constitutionally sound, the responsibility of review of classification is not that of the minister or of the relevant minister. It is the responsibility of the classification review panel. And really, this is inspired by something that we invented ourselves during the negotiation process. Those who are older in the room will remember what used to be said during that period. You cannot be a referee and a player at the same time. So in order to make sure that the minister is not a referee and a player at the same time, the minister in the system plays the appeal authority role. The classification review panel reviews and oversees classification, reclassification, and declassification. Heads of organs of state have got the classification and declassification responsibilities exercised under the supervision or oversight, not supervision, delete. Oversight of the classification review panel. The panel can review any decision to classify, to declassify, and to reclassify, to see if it is justifiable and legitimate. Remember, there's a troika of responsibility when it comes to classification, declassification, and reclassification. The objective must be clear, it must be justifiable, and must advance national security. And it must not be done in order to perpetrate any other reason other than that which is spelled out in the condition for classification. Minister, I hope I'm still in keeping with the mandate given here. May I then touch on the public debate
when the issue arose, I made sure that I understood what was our brief. My understanding was that we should really give a major motivation about the contents of the brief. So as a result of that, we did not really go into the details when we're giving the background of the issues that were raised during the debate in the National Assembly. There are two reasons for that, Chairperson, before I then provide the details. First, yes.
Around what? What was happening in the National Assembly?
Yes.
No, let's avoid that.
That's what I thought.
Let's avoid that. And honorable members, I'll appeal to you.
Yeah.
I'll appeal to you because you are losing a very important
opportunity.
Yes. To clarify yourself of issues that we are going to be confronted with. And this preoccupation with what happened in the National Assembly is exactly what I think there's a great attempt out there for the public to understand us to be that. The notion of this quaint notion of a rubber stamp. And I think we were also tempted to do that as members of the National Council of Provinces, putting questions to the minister and the acting DC in relation to what happened in the National Assembly. If we want to confess, I mean, the rules of Parliament allow that. If we want to confess as a select committee with our counterpart, that is the Portfolio Committee, we can do that. But equally so, would it be correct to do that? Would it be in our interest as an institution to do that? It wouldn't. We are losing an opportunity. And my worry was just that, or is still, that next week we are starting with our process of public hearing. And we are expected as members then to lead the process of presentation of the people. Is it that we are going to be standing in front of the public and say, you see, in the National Assembly, this is what happened. There was a right to know campaign. The minister said this in the National Assembly. Is it that what we are going to say? No. No. So we are losing a very important opportunity. And maybe to assist us, you know, to come to that, let me put it this way. Let me just try, minister and the acting DG. That's a very important. I mean, I like the sketch, or what do you call it? You must understand, I'm a part of education program. When I see these things, I see a sketch. Yeah, whatever. But so long as it's simplified. So that diagram is quite interesting. And I would request that we are provided with that copy, you know, because it's simplified. And interestingly, what I've observed, the consistency is the asset application to court appeal, and all the sort of things. And we know that how difficult is it for ordinary South Africans to access the justice. Now, in this instance, What mechanisms are put in place for an ordinary South African who thinks strongly about certain information to apply to a court of law? Can he walk into the court of law? He must go and seek counsel, and then counsel must make the application, the issues of the court, who then carries that? And I'm arranging this against the understanding of the role of the appeals review panel. Why should I? I mean, I don't have 15,000 to pay counsel to go and make an application for me at a high court or whatever court. When there is a panel which I could have easily accessed and motivated why I think that kind of information is important and therefore it must be tightly classified. People can just be given a sense of why the emphasis on the court and not really the review panel. I can imagine to next week, if I'm in, I can't remember exactly where we've been Googling to which place, and I'm told, I
I think these are some of the things that would really need simplification, because they are going to come up in this public area. And just to assist members on that, one of the things would be a question. My younger sister in Cooks asked me if it should come. I mean, I'm just hypothetical. How does this bill protect me as an ordinary South African? How do we simplify that question without being technical and very complicated? How do we simplify it? To tell me, no. It would be quite good. And the second question or linked to that would be, how does this bill, how can I use it also as an ordinary South African, a 20-year-old, to enhance the question of national security? Me now as an ordinary South African. How does it really assist me to enhance the question of national security? The third one would be, as a whistleblower, I'm told that this bill weaken my ability to report corruption. So that's a possible issue that may come up. So as a whistleblower, this bill seeks to weaken my capacity to report corruption. And even worse than that, it is referred to even as a secretive bill. What is put outside there, whether it be irresponsible reporting, because who redefined this bill? Who redefined it? Is it opposition parties? Is it the media? Or is it interested groups or interest groups? We don't know. Because if I read now, for the first time today, I received a presentation on B6B2010. It said the title of the bill is Protection of State Information Bill. But before I got this presentation, all that has been said outside there is that we are dealing with a secrecy bill. Who did this? Does it really seek to enhance the protection of corruption as it has been reported to me at my local newspaper or whatever, as it has been said? Lastly, it would be the first one. I have information. I don't have money. It's difficult to access the judiciary or the justice system. How do I then apply against the fact that there is a panel that I could have easily gone to? Why can't that panel be empowered to then deal with matters in the manner in which the court is expected to deal with? So that the court must be your last, after having even appealed to the minister. Then if somebody comes with this 10 million and says, no, I'm going to sponsor you, let's go and seek three senior counsels, bring them together, and then we apply to court. So how does the bill affect me, really, to negate what has been implanted in me? I think maybe that's because these are questions that we are going to be confronted with from next week moving forward. Thank you.
No, I agree with you. This is a committee that we must deal with this thing afresh. I fully agree with you on that one. But to add to your question, this penalty, 25 years, 15 years and what, how did you derive at this year, 15 or 25 years and what and what and what? That is a clarity question. Maybe if you can explain, the minister said the cabinet was very strong on that. That's just a question for clarity. The year.
Yabonga Sal. Mr. Chairman, through you, the Minister Funavalimtambela, and so I have to accept that the business day misquoted you, and you didn't say that the those who opposed the bill are proxies for foreign spies, and we're now funding protesters. So, Ngiyathemba, I accept that. And I look forward to seeing the handout that I believe you've asked one of your people to send to me. And Mr. Chairman, it is indeed an opening that is now wide open for us, the talk of 100 years of the ANC as a liberation movement. And I wish the DA well for the next 100 years and the future government of South Africa. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to build on your question, because I think there's more to it. The point you make is important, but there is more to it. And I'd ask perhaps the Minister or the Acting DG to look at the hypothetical example, because a lot of what the Acting DG has said is talking about applying through prior for something you know about. Now, the very nature of this bill is to, and I know you don't like this word secrecy, but the secret word, I think, is used in the bill sometimes. It's classified. It's classified information that technically you don't know about. So how do you go about applying for information you don't know about? Now, let me give you this example. I'm a newspaper reporter. I am provided with classified information, which may, in terms of the criteria, have actually been correctly classified, but now clearly reveals corruption. What is the step-by-step process I have to go through before I can publish in my publication the information that I've been given, given the procedures of the bill, as well as the procedures of fire? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, thank you. I'll just give a further and just to give some of the details to you. Sir, I'm grateful you asked these questions, because they are real questions of today. But what is difficult is for us to predict on every aspect one should be our response on what may be planted in the public domain, not by us, by other people. because we may be giving you answers today, I don't know what they're going to plant in the public domain tomorrow. But some of these questions you have raised are quite critical. The issue of access, maybe let me say, this bill is not intended to deal with all the ills in our society. It is purely intended to ensure that we deal with issues which affect our national security. That's a limited scope. It's not a Ufobong. A flappy on kids on that. But we are simply focusing on dealing with issues which affect national security. The issues of access to justice, they are dealt with by other departments, by other laws, and I am aware, because we work as a collective as government, that there are many other aspects to improve this, what we have just complained about. The issue of access to justice. And the Minister of Justice has really progressed over the last year on this, but there are still challenges, and which we think we should overcome, because the aim is to ensure that every citizen has access, reasonable access to justice in South Africa, and we remain on call for that. But I think more importantly, because there are lots of other structures which are mentioned here which are easy to access, like you, my colleague, the members of parliament, the oversight structures. They don't cost you money. And they've got easy access to raise
some of the critical issues in terms of reviewing information or asking the questions pertaining to these things. Those don't cost you money. You don't have to go to court for them. The Joint Standing Committee of Intelligence, the Inspector General, and all these other oversight structures, they are intended also to enhance accountability of the security structures, particularly sensitive information to the state. of course, you are raising this critical thing, you know, going to court, maybe having access to information, it may cost me time, and the legal aid board, maybe just to point out, because I know I made presentation on this, we are, as government, trying to really extend it, not to focus on urban areas, even to rural, to have access even in the rural areas. But those who want real access to justice mustn't be deterred by lack of financial resources. But as Dennis has said, in certain circumstances, the justice system may take long, and we have created through this bill a shortened mechanism for access to justice. Those were the things which were put in the flowchart. How does this bill benefit me? What do you say? As a South African, how does that fit in? Yes. The Christian is democracy. The Dennis will give details. But one aspect of this bill which is often neglected is this protection of valuable information. Primarily because all of us agree on it. You know how the criminals are twisting our ID documents, getting citizenship, committing crimes using our own documents. If you have got access to our birth certificate, it gives access to all documents. And they then use these documents to commit crimes. We all know how people open accounts using falsified or cloned IDs and so on. So it will prevent, it will help you as a ordinary South African, irrespective of your wealth status, to be protected from this. We all know how those who try and get our citizenship through illegal means claim that because they know if you are married to South Africans, you automatically gain your citizenship. So people are falsely married to other people. So it helps you as a citizen. So I think the issues of valuable information protection. We all know what happened to driver's license, cloning of cars. Come on. You're driving your car, CA, number so-and-so, there's another CA which is committing crime, which is CA, same number, same color in the logbook. So all these things, you sleep better. You sleep more relaxed knowing that the information you have given to the state, in the Home Affairs Department, in the Transport Department, in the Companies Department, is all protected. No one can abuse that information on your name and use your name for committing crime. Of course, the issues of national security, I said, is a public good. And I'll ask Dennis to maybe expand on this thing. When we say there shall be peace and security, peace is better than war. When we say we extend our national security doctrine, not just to be limited to state security matters, but to be limited to also include human security matters, where we have to ensure that people are not only free from want and fear, but also free from fear and want in addition. But those are the issues we are including here. We have to ensure that our citizens, we can have these protections that in North South Africa, in the next 8 years, is going to start to get because we can protect those things. So that's a broader approach. which focused on the citizen. I think those are the things to me which really matters in how are we protecting citizens with this bill. But Dennis will go into some details on this. How can I use this to enhance national security? So issue of good citizenship and the issue of responsibility of the citizen. And we have just mentioned one aspect of it, which is putting the law. You find these things, you know it's classified, and it's supposed to be classified, even maybe after reading or you're not sure, but you return it to the relevant authority. That's good citizenship. You contribute greatly than just running with that document without knowing what's going to be the consequences of publicizing that thing in every taxi rack or any bus stop or even including the media. So that's good citizenship, where you say this thing is about our security as a country, citizens of this nation. So I must also contribute to it. There are many other aspects. We can contribute to this by not committing those crimes which are defined there. We as South Africans, because the truth being said, I think some members have raised this thing, it is our own people, some of them who are employed in the hands of states who are dishing out these things which compromise all of us as South Africans. It is the people in our employ who are doing these things. For you is to report them when they try to do these things, when they want to do crime. It's to report them. It's to report them. What we should not do is to say, let's put legal means of doing crime, legalizing crime through this. And we'll deal with this when we're dealing with some of these outstanding controversial issues. Because in our view, some of them, they are saying, legalize illegality by putting in our safety code. We shouldn't do that as South Africans, irrespective of who's in power at that particular time. We need to deal with the issue of whistleblowers. who did redefine the bill? It's not us. It's not us. It's not government. It's very important that if you are engaging in a discussion, even if you are angry, but remain rational, don't start by hoping that by distorting things, you will make what is wrong correct. By distorting things, you see, if you put your case and argue your case, you are always ready to listen. But when you are falsifying or spreading false information in the public, it will catch up with you. So this issue about secrecy bill in our own reading, those who are writing about it or mentioning it in the public space, they know exactly what it is. This is protection of state information bill. We even changed protection of information to protection of state information in the hands of state, and that information which really required to be protected, because a lot of information in the hands of state doesn't need any protection, and that's why we give it freely to our citizens to empower them so that they can use it to advance their lives. So it is a worrying trend. Of course, the bill is not about secrecy. It is about balancing the openness and secrecy in conduct of national security. It is not about secrecy. If you check every clause, it talks about this balance. And that's what is done by any democracy. There are no democratic institution which just promotes secrecy. It's how do you balance these two, because you need both of them to advance democracy. You need security, national security, to advance as democracy. And if you don't have that national security, you have got no scope at all with all the provisions of your democracy to exercise that democracy. So it is important then to balance. It's a matter of balance, Shepherd would like to, without being deterred, I take the comment from a friend. I commit Brian, I've instructed Brian to give you the copy of my speech, and if I am instruct him also to give you the copy of the Hunter of what I said, I'll put that one there. If prayer really is about what you know, and the classified information is about what you don't know, I think that's a question. And then, as a journalist, I come across what I don't know. You can't come across what you don't know. You get information. And if you get that information as a journalist, we are not going to be criminalized in South Africa. Not only as a journalist, as a member of parliament, because this is a law of general application. It's not about journalists. It's not about regulating journalists. It's not about stamping down on investigative journalists. We've got absolutely no interest. Ours is to uphold national security. How the media is regulated is another department. But what does it say? It says you are not going to be criminalized, you are not going to be taken to court just because you came into possession of a classified document and you returned it to the relevant authority. We'll thank you. We may even give you a medal for it. I would really like to assure there is no provision for us in this act to start questioning and prosecuting, or they were saying we'll start following up these people who bring this document. Ours would be to thank that person, because if they're good citizens, so we'll never prosecute people for merely in possession and bringing back the document to the state. so therefore, of course, if you come across a such document, because as human being, you're very curious being, I wouldn't expect that you have not read the document. Absolutely. Any reasonable man will expect that we should have read the document. We are familiar with the content. I may ask you, do you think there's anything which is illegal there? If you think so, tell me, so that we follow, assist you to follow, to follow the correct processes. But I should thank you, other than harassing you or following up on you and asking you who actually gave you this document. If you know, it may be helpful, but if you don't know, I'm not going to take you to court for that. So there is no citizen of South Africa, whether he's a member of parliament, whether he's an ordinary citizen, whether he's a journalist, whether he's a foreign national, who will be crucified because he's returning a document which is maybe classified and defined to be somehow in his possession. Maybe to illustrate this view, in some of these patents, classified documents, the way they were distributed to the members of society, they were pushed under the doors, they were sent from anonymous emails from the shops and so on. So it's not a matter that we really expect that the person should have given you by hand, that this is a document I'm leaking to you. And leaking classified documents is a bad thing, and good citizens shouldn't do that. But hiding corruption is a bad thing which all of us must fight, including this bill. Fight hiding corruption through classification. And all of us as citizens, we must contribute and take that fight, because corruption, they say, it eats from the heart of the poor. If there's one thing which destroys the fabric of our society, it's this cancer called corruption, which all of us have got a responsibility. That's why we put specific provision in this bill to ensure that no official can hide corruption through classification. I thank you.
You know, in all honesty, I really
am going to be spoiling, but since I am a good public servant who takes instructions, I am going to do this way. In the process of creating vision and mission and spelling out strategies, it is normally said that imagine that you are dead and people are attending your funeral. What is it that you would like seen written on your tombstone? Now, if I am this Bill and I am now 90 years old, this is what I would like South Africans to say of me. Thank you for protecting my birth certificate, because as a poor child, I was able to access a grant. It must say, I was able to access government services because the information that was captured by the Department of Home Affairs was correct. The Social Security Agency was able to provide for me because the information that was held by the state was correct. It must say, I'd like to thank the Department of Education for protecting my certificate, because I was then able, when I got the money from government, to get a bursary to study at a university or at an FET. My information was correct, properly stored, and well protected. Must be able to say that at university, after studying for many years, they also kept my documents, my certificates. And when I applied for jobs, they were able to verify the correctness of the information I possessed. And when I sought to apply for a driver's license, I was able to produce the supporting documentation because they were well kept. I was able to apply for various stages in order to be licensed to drive, and now I am able, after all these years, to say I did do this all because government took steps to protect that information. I was able to grow old, live in peace and security, because the government did what was required by ensuring that safety and security prevailed in the country and took us away from the scourge of taxi violence, took us away from the scourge of train violence, took us away from the challenges we faced from espionage, because the government did indeed live to the expectations of our constitution to ensure that we are free from want and free from fear. Should be able to say, Chatterton, that when our neighbors were facing threats, those who classified information did so to make sure that the scourge of transnational crime was combated. Human smuggling, trafficking, drugs, arms and weapons of all sorts that undermined our security was possible because the sensitive information that needed protection was well looked after. Must be able to say, Chatterton, that after all this, I now look back and say, thank you to the National Assembly for listening to the voices of the people where they met us. Thank you to the NCOP for considering the real issues of concern that helped to tighten the proposed legislation and created the conducive environment for the national security structure to be able to deliver, not working all by themselves, but with others that put our people first. The minister has spoken and has said everything. I just thought that I can say it with different words, but emphasize the same point. This, I believe, is what we should tell our people when they ask about it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Acting DG. I think, honorable members, we need to really thank the minister and, of course, the department, and appreciate their time. This is going to assist a great deal in ensuring that as we go out from next week, engaging with the South African population, citizens, they will have a better understanding now of this bill. Like I also said, Acting DG, all I knew was that there is a secret bill. But today I was presented with a different title. So it is quite clear that our people out there, it would be our responsibility as members of parliament of this committee to go out there and clarify these issues to them and make them understand, simplify them. Honorable Minister, we would be engaging in public hearings. And of course, we made the point last week that it would also be in the interest of the officials from the department, those who are available to be part of the DCS, in order to get a sense of what then comes out of this public hearing. Of course, presentations will be led by members. And as we all know, these are public hearings. It's an opportunity for us to listen and hear what is it that my younger brother thinks of the bill on the blue, but not for you to tell my younger brother what you think or what your party thinks of the bill. We will only think of what your party thinks of the bill when we come back now and deliver it among ourselves as members of the select committee. It's then now you'll have an opportunity to stand up according to the position of my party, this section, supposed to read like this. Based on the public hearings and my party think in a particular way. And also there's nothing wrong for honorable members to come back from the public hearings and say, I think my party has come to this conclusion that it has been neglect and therefore agrees with it. There will be nothing wrong in doing that. You don't have to prove that you are in opposition by virtue of wanting to oppose it. Because we have ours as South Africans, we have always defined ourselves as these people who are ordinarily progressive, honorable Bloom. And even you would see that in some instances, opposition is defined as progressive opposition, constructive engagement with an intent of building a society. How we define that society is another matter. But for so long as it takes us forward, it ensures that it unites the South African population or South African people. So let me thank the minister, together with the department, of course. I'm aware that it's 1 o'clock, honorable members, but we have set decisions that we have to take around this. Thank you very much. We will continue to engage with you. But I'm sure now, in the main, it will be the acting decision. Okay, thank you. Honorable members, that brings us to our quick next item. Yeah, no, no, you are okay. We'll keep in touch. Okay, now that's it. Are you flying on four? Oh. Might be. Okay, thank you very much. I think I must have done that in the beginning to thank the interest that the Free State has showed in the exercise. That's the whip of the Free State Legislature who's now leaving us. No, not the chief whip. Yeah, not the chief whip. Deputy chief whip. Little fun way. Okay. Honorable members, we have the minutes before. Mamba Zamba. So can we take decisions in office?
I'm not the main person,
General. I'd love to take that. You are a main person in actual fact in this
minute. I really desperately need to go, Mr. Chairman. May I, please, with your permission, I'll be as back as quickly as I can.
All right. Okay. Honorable members, we have a set of minutes. Do we have a formal mover for the adoption of the minutes? You don't have a motion?
Have the minutes.
Oh. Okay. Yes, sir. D'accord. That's too many. Do we have them now? How do you suggest to deal with them if you only receive them now? Honorable Bloom, Honorable Martin.
I'm asking, say, for 2 minutes. Let me go through, and then we can deal, because it was not a long meeting. Only 2 minutes.
Because I want to focus on that, but all I am asking is, let's also check our pigeonholes. Let's ask those who are assisting us for information all the time, because I had this yesterday in the check. I have something.
No, let me.
Yeah. No, Chair.
No.
I think if you look at the agenda, I thought we'd treat them as. But it was up to now, I don't have the minutes. And I personally collected all documents from my teaching hall yesterday. They were not there. And even this morning. And if you check what the agenda says, it's tabling of this particular co-adoption in the next committee meeting. That's what they're saying here. They're not saying in terms of this committee.
Right.
And that's what the agenda is saying. That's what I thought we would do.
Thank you for that clarification.
Let's deal with it this way. Let's deal with the correspondence, and then we'll deal with the management. Okay. And that will allow members an opportunity to. Honorable Bloom?
I will fully agree with that, but there's a complication. When is our next meeting? You see, the next meeting will be in April, when we come together again.
Well, according to the program, but not really.
Sorry?
Not really, according to our program, but not really. We might be expected to have probably one or two meetings, even if it's outside the precinct of Parliament, in a province, wherever we would be, we can still have a meeting. All right.
Then I will agree, Chair. I support this.
Okay. Then, honorable members, we have got two letters. The letters are addressed to me. The first letter was written on the 25th of October 2011. I don't know if this letter was written in anticipation of the first one was earlier, on the 20th of January 2011. And the second one was arrested on the 25th of October 2011. And the committee was only established officially. No, the resolution was read in the House in November. And the committee was officially established and the chair was only elected in December, but already in January 2011 and October 2011, these letters were written to the chair of the committee. So I don't know if we have a genius. But if one has to look at the content of the letters, it would have really been assisted by the minister. Because all the issues that the honorable member is raising here are addressed in the minutes. Now, the principle that I'm raising is the committee must then assist, because if we take a decision in a meeting and agree as a collective, once we leave the meeting, I will be expected to implement the decisions of the committee. Now, if after the meeting I get a separate request to deal with matters in a different way, does it really assist the work of the committee? Because now the issues raised here on the first letter were addressed last week on how we're going to approach the issues of the public hearings. We agreed that where necessary and in those vast provinces, we will look into the possibilities of having three public hearings. But the member is raising the same thing that we agreed to. Now, I don't know. I didn't want to put it to him, but I'm raising this because I want to assume that these letters were written to the committee, not necessarily to me as a person, because I operate within this collective. It's my responsibility to ensure, together with the committee administrator, that decisions of the committee are implemented. And we even agreed that the provincial whips, those who serve there, would go back to their provinces and look at the program and satisfy themselves that the areas, venues, and so forth that have been identified are in actual for what the provinces want. We even took it further to say that by the end of Thursday, we would have satisfied ourselves and concluded the matter. Now, I don't know. I think that this meeting must really assist us. Because I can imagine if tomorrow another party does the same and so forth. Honorable Martin, and then let's allow Honorable Lee maybe an opportunity to. Yeah. Okay. Honorable Lee.
Chairman, thank you. You're quite right to do that. And Chairman, the letters, the dates, I apologize for the incorrect dates on the letters, and the committee secretary will confirm when they were received. Now, with regard to the content of the letters, whilst we agreed on certain things at the committee meeting, and the minutes will reflect that, there are certain things we did not agree to, and indeed, it was the venues of, to be specific, a number of things which I've raised in these letters. And so they are new issues, and I'll continue to raise them. If I agree absolutely with you we as a party can't come here and agree to things and go away and disagree with the same things we speak. I have no problem with that. However, where we see shortcomings in the operations and the workings of the committee, we'll continue to raise them. And we may do it here in the committee, and exactly the point that our room raised is, when exactly are we going to meet again? We don't know. And you've indicated we may well meet, even if it's out in the provinces, and that's great. But in the interim, we'll continue to use letters to you as the chair, quite right, not as you as the individual, and you then deal with the letters in the way you see fit. Whether you reply without addressing them to the committee is your prerogative. And you're doing absolutely the right thing by placing them in front of the committee. So I don't see anything in these letters where we've contradicted a decision of the committee. If there is, then I need to apologize and say it. So, Mr. Chairman, the medium of writing is an age-old medium, and it's one that we'll continue to use. However, if we are abused, then you're absolutely right to bring us into order, and we'll accept that and apologize. So I'm not sure exactly where we have erred. If you could point that out to us, I'll be the first to apologize and apologize to the committee as a whole. But I'm not sure where this error has taken place.
Thank you, Chair. You see, like you have said, we've agreed on the principles. And provincial whips were supposed to provide details. And indeed, in my province, for instance, I know that the kind of grouping and venues was discussed by the provincial whip together with the province. And I think we were all in agreement that this is what should happen. The details were then worked by provincial whips. And your letter, for instance, Chair, suggests, in fact, it talks about arbitrary decision-making process, which is new to us. I mean, we can't agree to that because we have not. We've deliberated on the issues. We've deliberated on the criteria and processes. It can't be arbitrary when our provincial rules are still engaging, in fact, with various provinces around the details of the hearings themselves. I think we disagree with that notion completely. It does not exist. The other issue, Chair, is that of the principles we've agreed. Because your letter again suggests that we change other venues to include Cape Town, for instance, and so on and so on. These are really minor details, Chair, that should not be made the work of this committee, Chair. Because really, as far as I'm concerned, we've done everything, and in terms of principles, and the provinces, and together with our provincial groups, must work finer details of the program, Chair. I think that's where we should leave this thing, Chair, without really wasting time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think I've been covered by Honorable Umazosiwe on the issues of actually the principle. Because I didn't, when I saw this letter, I didn't understand why they were written. Because as we are here to speak and debate issues. And I believe that maybe if Honorable Lees had a problem with the problem of venue, the right person to consult would have been the provincial whip, because it was said that we will discuss, the provincial whips will discuss, will be determining this with the communication between them and their provinces to make sure that we do the correct thing. So I really don't understand this, and I think this thing of letters, when we are allowed to speak in a meeting, should continue, unless it's something that we don't all know. But all the issues raised here are the issues that were discussed. And maybe on the issue of areas that Honorable Lee suggests need to be covered, like suggesting for Pretoria and Gauteng. We said in this committee, we are going to make sure that we cover all rural and urban areas. But because of time, we cannot cover everywhere. So we cannot be now held at random and maybe be forced to choose an area that is seen to be an elite area because of certain reasons that are politically motivated. That's not what we are all for here. We said we should cover our areas, urban and rural, and not a particular elite group of a particular area. So I don't have to go on that chairperson, but I think this tendency must just be stopped because we are here. If we are not satisfied, let us talk. And if there is a problem of venues, it is a problem that must be discussed with the provincial whip and the province. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I want to follow on what I don't start from a first. Just even though I was not in the meeting, but I can assure you, Chair, definitely one of the reasons of where we are going to would have been in each province. We've looked at the size of each particular province. The three biggest would be KwaZulu Natal, Limpopo, Eastern Cape. According to the program, those have three because of their size. And you can't therefore compare Western Cape to KZN, which has 11 regions, and a province like Western Cape. No, they are not comparable. So we must not do that. And exactly what Honorable Lee was saying, even in the letter, it's going to Kukuletu. That's what people ask. But also, I want us to look at the fact that this is not the beginning of the whole process. This is a continuation of the process. And to know, because we serve different interests of members of parliament, we must begin to look at whose constituencies are affected most by this bill. Let's not do that. Otherwise, we'll miss it. Because you see, we've gone extra miles, not an extra mile here. We've gone extra miles, because if you read the constitution properly, what is Section 75 about and how we are processing the bill, I really we've done the best. If anything, we need to be rewarded after this, because this is one best way we would have done more than what is required of us. This is a national interest. It's a national competence. So that's what the law says when if we follow the constitution properly. So I don't think, Chair, we must really, really do those. There may be a few. One thing that's correct, though, Mr. Lee, which is what we will have to remind Mr. Dixon. The sooner we advertise, the better. On that one, I will agree with you. We need to do that. As we leave this, we must make sure that in tomorrow's newspapers, throughout, and up to that day or days, we will know really that, and not only in the newspapers that are bought by people. In my township, if they read what is called Vukani, what is called City Vision, you also get the Tiger Berger, Aslam News, and all those. All those, we must just make sure that we cover, so that no one says, no, I didn't get. And lastly, Chair, I find it strange to now request for a budget. What's the suspicion? So that we all get to know. If there's any maladministration, we'd better be informed as well, if there's anything like that. So I propose that, Chair, we keep to the proposal and the agreement that were made by the committee last week.
Chair, you know, the problem I have is that in the last meeting, if you take the first letter, all these issues were raised by Member Lee, and that's how we reached that particular conclusion. I urge to move. Now, why that follow up with this particular letter, I don't understand. You know, the second area, I mean, if I'll take Gauteng, because these issues were raised, we removed one district because it's rural. We took it to an urban area, which is Tshwane, and those issues are in your letter. But and if you look at the program, it has addressed exactly what you raised in that specific meeting, you know, and that's why I was worried as to why this left us now, you know, and that's what we have agreed upon, and those are issues that we're trying to accommodate you in dealing with this specific matter, you know. And also, I think what Member Mazoso has indicated, in this meeting, we agreed that as this member of this particular committee, let us work with our whip and our provinces. Let us work with our whip and provinces and make sure that by last week, is it Tuesday or Wednesday, that thing is dealt with so that the program is concluded by Thursday. That's what we have agreed in this particular meeting, you know. Now, and that's what we have done from and exactly in terms of my own province, that's exactly what we did, you know. Now, I'm not sure the purpose and the reason for this letter. And maybe we need some more explanation or clarity around this matter, because these issues were raised in the meeting and we have agreed in future.
Okay, Prince Zulu.
Chair, for me is a concern. Now, I think it is to, in the proper way, sometimes to consult with money. Because I was talking about the rural people to empower this, have a say in this bill. But if we take this process to the Molo, you sabotage Mashabatin, sabotage Nongoma, the era of Upongolo, is a pro-rural. The Molo, to me, is the urban, because it's a township and the small town of this thing. If we say in Fayette and then Busuti down to near the border of Pongola and Fayette, maybe to me it would be understandable. Now, Umondo is the last side of the north of in that Zululand district. It's not in center to this Zululand district. Maybe I raise that concern to Mr. Zimande to raise it. Yeah, maybe if as a whip we take the decision without consulting us as the members. You should be consulting us. For me, I reside in Zululand. I know the areas of Zululand, this area. You know the centers of Zululand.
That's fine. Honorable Bloom.
Something different. It's not on the old thing. It's on the day of Thursday. That's what I want to do. Can I raise it? No, I'm saying, Chair, some of the public hearing is on Thursday. And you know, it's caucus day, Thursday. I'm asking, is it possible? I'm using the word, is it possible for us to reconsider that it's not every day. I think it's two or three public hearings that is on a Thursday. Now I'm asking the committee, is it possible to reconsider the day and maybe shift it to a Wednesday?
The only problem was that would be the traveling. Because that is the main thing. You remember the initial, the first time we made the presentation was that Monday we were traveling from our constituency to the province. Tuesday is the public hearing. If we finish at 4 or 5, we then go back to our accommodation. Wednesday we travel to the next province. And then we do our work on Thursday. And then Friday, if we still have the time, we can travel on Thursday. If not, then Friday we travel back to our province or constituency. So that would be the only thing. And if, I don't know, maybe I was not that clear in our first meeting, because that's one of the things I requested all political parties to consider, putting proposals to their parties just to be released from, especially caucus days, you know, just for the purpose of this exercise. It will just be three or four caucuses that you would meet, that you would
missed. Next week one you will miss. No, you will. You will, yeah. So I'm just appealing. Let's just request our parties to be soft on us when it comes to that. At least we are not sitting at home, not doing anything. So, all right. Where there are difficulties, we'll see how to play around. Honorable Mufuke, and then follow.
Chair, I'm also looking at the progress, and I don't know with other provinces, but with the Free State, it is clashing with the state of the province address.
So, oh, yes.
Yes. I don't know whether it is the very same problem with other provinces, but the Free State, it is clashing with it. And we'll be in the book.
Well, I must be honest, now I've made peace with that. I've made peace with my state of the province. I surrender. Precisely because of that. I could already see the clashes. I even indicated to my premier that if you don't see me there, don't take it that I'm undermining. I know with other provinces, you find premier, chairpersons, parties, they insist that members must be there. But all I'm saying, we'll do that. Let's look at how do we try and balance it. But where, like I said, even with the party caucus, we may just have to find ways of flexibility. It's a one-stop thing. Once we are done with this baby, it will never happen again. Okay. Is it on the program?
Yeah.
I thought we were moving away. Okay. Honorable Ranto and then Boroto, Sila, okay.
It's just a comment that says, if we are going to consider all of these things that are happening within the time of this thing, it means we will never catch the deadline of the bill. So we also, as members of this committee, we should also consider compromising other issues for the sake of this bill.
Yeah, mine was on the, just to, it's a mistake, where it's supposed to be Buhlabela District Municipality, you said it has been for Bushbuckridge. Yeah, Bushbuckridge is in Buhlabela, not Ehlanzeni. And maybe my second thing would be, what she has just said, I know we have got to compromise a lot of things for this team, even including our committee. Yeah, but I must say that when it comes to the state of the province address, we mustn't really overlook that, because I believe that our mandate is more to find out what is being presented on that day and be able to move forward in the National Council of Provinces. Where it's not easy, we can't change, but let's try and consider the state of the province as well. You are declaring that you have just given up. I don't think it's your own, but I, as a member that comes from Mpumalanga, I really believe I need to be there, unless really there are issues that are forcing me not to be there. Thank you, Chief.
No, thank you, Chair. I think the issue of striking a balance, it becomes important. That then relates to the point raised by Honorable Ranto. Let us consider all those things. But the reality of the matter is, for example, with myself, because the state of the nation address will be coming to my own constituency, you know, it will be difficult to move out of that particular situation. But the state of the province, but the issue I'm saying is, let us look at all these things, because I'm fortunate enough, it's coming to my own area. I don't have the date. We'll have to check. You know, it will only be announced this weekend, on Sunday, in a prayer meeting. It will be officially announced there. But I'm saying, let's find a balance, you know, because the reality of the matter is, over the round toys make it very clear. If we don't make sure that we implement this particular program, we will miss. We are going to miss our deadline. You see? And that's why I'm calling for us to find a balance in dealing with this particular situation.
A suggestion without prolonging. That let's look at our provinces. When are our state of the nation addresses, and whether if we want to be in our state of the province. Address. If that is the case, please indicate to Dixon, because that will assist us also in dealing with the deployment program, on how then members are going to be deployed and so forth. Can we deal with that? Can we link that with the deployment? Okay.
You don't do it. I think this one will be much shorter. What we did here, honorable members, where we are going to have three public hearings,
we'll have three groups, and there they are, group one, group two, group three. Where we're going to have two groups, there is group one, group two, with all the names there. We will just finalize the issue of the actual venues. We do have the tax of the meeting. Just now what we are waiting for is the actual venues from province. If you say Mamelodi where? So that when we put the issue on us, people must know Mamelodi where. Each community hall is going to be an open ground, it's going to be a church, and so forth. So we need to know that. If it is Bushbuck Bridge, is it at the chief call, where are we going to meet? So that we know exactly what is it. Are we agreed on this deployment of the groups?
Okay.
Let me take Honorable Gies, Honorable Bloom, and then Honorable Dorame.
Chairman, certainly the groups are fine, but it says opposition member. When should we make our names available? Do you want us to do it right now?
Yes, sir.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may then suggest in the three-group arrangement, I'll speak for the DA. I will be group one, and Honourable Worth will be group three. And then on the two-group arrangement, I will be group one, and Honourable Worth will be group two.
Then Honorable Group.
On the same issue, I will be in on the three groups. Group three, COPE will be in group three, and then the two groups, group one, COPE will be in group one. Thank you.
signing the register, I saw the name of Honorable Gunda. And I think the opposition here, we have got 4 members, not 5, I think. Yeah, is it 5?
No.
It's 4 members.
One Pope, one smaller party, IFP, which makes 4. Exactly what is correcting, which is wrong.
I thought the original resolution. Did you notice?
No.
The public in the is that? Is that? And you only need a cleaner enough to change that.
Right. When it was resolved, spoke about 15 members, 10 from the ANC. When it was resolved in the House, it said 10 from the ANC and 5 from the opposition. And unless we look at the resolution, because that's what was resolved in the House.
15 members.
15 members. All right.
Can I then just, I mean, those opposition members who are here have requested certain deployment. Could then Honorable Gunda take Group 2 in the 3, Group 1, and wherever, you know, just fill the, what I'm saying is fill the space. He hasn't come here. So otherwise, we're going to have maybe a little bargaining to do about what group, you know, I mean.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
That's fine. We'll plug him in.
All right. Agreed, honourable members. Now, what we would also request from members, please, we are not going to. You won't get a call asking you now, the honourable member, where do you want to go? When arrangements will be done, or if the arrangements are done, it will be based on this. It will be based on. So, please, like I said, it's going to affect not only our activities in Parliament, but even our family life. At last.
Okay. Please, if we could have our travel arrangement for Monday. Monday, we're already leaving, Western Cape. If we could please tell us.
Monday, we're coming to.
Yeah, we've got to be here. We've got to be here in Cape Town.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to the Free State. Now, the planes are few and far between there. Like, we had a no-fly over when the ANC had the 100th celebration. We had no flies. We had no flies in Mangaung. But I must know what time I must be back here. You understand? And where the commies? Are the commies going to leave from Parliament? Are they coming to Acacia Park or the other park?
No.
I must know the time, you see. There's one plane a week.
For
a week, the ANC used all the planes up, so we've got no planes left to get back in time. So please, I must know that, but not later than tomorrow, so I can tell my travel agency.
No,
thanks.
So let's solve the problem of next week. I don't want to go to the no flying zone or the declaration. For next week, I think that it's normal coming to Cape Town. We will be sleeping at our village. And then on Tuesday, we'll be coming to Parliament. We'll then travel from Parliament to, or why don't you allow Dixon to report on this before I mix it up?
Honourable members, the intention is to travel from the Monday. So with the Western Cape, it's fairly, the Guguletu part is fairly easy. The members in that group would sleep at the venues and then be taken the Tuesday to the Guguletu venue. But for the other group, which is in the Eden district, it's quite a distance away. So members would have to leave the Monday so that they sleep over in accommodation there, and then travel from that accommodation to the venue, which would be shorter. But those things are not finalised yet because we weren't sure which members would be on group, or the opposition members would be on group one. So now we'll be able to finalise arrangements by calling you personally and arranging those. Group one is Honorable Tao's group, which is Guguletu. We're looking at the possibility of the chartered flight, but obviously that has cost implications. And
Chairman, just a quick one, on, and I agree absolutely with Honourable Clinton, because it does actually require, I'm afraid, interaction between either Gershwin and ourselves, or someone in ourselves. We can't, the staff can't just make arrangements. You know, I mean, I'll drive to Joburg rather than drive to Durban. To me, it's almost equidistant. I'm not going to drive to Durban, then fly to Joburg, you understand, and then fly to George. So I think that, unfortunately, that interaction needs to happen it's a nuisance, but it has to happen. And Mr. Chairman, if you're going to allow Ntuanambi to pull rank and push you to Eden while she goes to Guguletu, that means I have to go to George as well, because I'm in Group 1, and I'd like to see some cake. No, Mr. Chairman, it's in Jeff.
No, Chairperson, I'm not joking on this one. You see, Gershwin have said Group 1 is going to Guguletu. The Chief Whip is saying, no, that's their dynamics. We must stick to the program. Thanks.
To play around. You know, allow us space to play around. Okay, the program is like this. I mean, I was looking at the program, and I'm thinking to myself, the group that, if we go to Limpopo, we have to come back from Limpopo to Free State, when in actual fact we could be doing Mpumalanga at the same time, because of the proximity of the province. If we are in the Northern Cape, if you look at the areas that have been identified for the Northern Cape, which is the next closest province, it would be Northwest or it would be the Free State. A group that comes from Puruman in the Northern Cape, would it have to go back to Kimberley, or can it not just travel from Puruman to Mafikeng and then Klerksdorp and deal with the issues there? It would have been something else. I mean, if you go to KZN, do you have to come back to Cape Town, or do we just go over to the Eastern Cape? I mean, those are... Let's not be too rigid on the program. So if you see there are changes, please just bear with us. We're looking at how best we can make our life also much easier. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
As we look at that, sometimes our administrators don't know the places themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, if you have to go to Herbstivan, they're having to fly to... Nelspruit and come back is another long distance and so on. So such...
In actual fact, you could be flying to Limpopo to follow us.
For instance, if you come from Polokwane and you want to go to Bushbuck Bridge, you don't even have to fly back to Nelspruit and back to Bushbuck Bridge. Such things.
Mm.
So it is important that you find somebody who understands those areas and be able to advise, because some may just need a road.
Maybe Gershwin, what you need to do, tomorrow. So just request a meeting with the parliamentary liaison of province, because they would know better the province, because they are from there. Now how do I become a liaison officer of a province if you don't know the province? Let's get into that now. All right. I don't know that. Honourable members, don't you want this meeting to end? So we tried to organize food. These people are saying we applied late. We thought we'd be done by 12:30. So we didn't order until 12:30, and then I requested. So that kitchen staff says, no, it's too late.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, we haven't addressed all the issues that Anit raised. I take it then that the issue of a budget is not going to be dealt with. We're going to do that.
Not today.
But is it going to be dealt
with? No, it will. I mean, any committee in Parliament, after its program has been submitted, committee section looks at it, and then the budget is
I'm very happy with that, Mr. Chairman. And so the other issue is the question, Chairman, is the meeting closed?
Come again?
Is the meeting closed?
I guess that's what the members will say.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then I'm going to have to write you another letter.
Please, let's avoid letters. Can you just listen to one of the
people? Mr. Chairman, I hear the feelings about the detail, but I really honestly believe that the members of this committee must know the detail. Where are the meetings going to be advertised? What media? Honourable Antoine Hambe has made a very good point about the need to advertise in small community kind of stuff. So by now, surely there is a program. Honourable Antoine Hambe is saying it must be done today. Surely we know by today where we're going to advertise. And so on. And then I'd like to see a schedule going ahead for the whole program as to where we're advertising. And then we can say, like Honourable Zulu, well, actually, there's this publication in my area that needs to be covered. But we don't know at this stage where this is going to happen. So,
let me not go into the media strategy and blah, blah, blah. I thought those are issues that will be left for me and Gershwin then, and, you know, the assistance I'll be getting from the Parliament and so forth. But if you need a media strategy, I think strategy would be ready very soon, sometimes next week or so. But to do some on that.
Now, Honourable Chairman and Honourable Members, we are working with the Public Relations Office, and they've got the footprints with regard to...
Honourable Zulu, Honourable Tuanambi.
We are working with the Parliamentary Communication Service. We also are working with the public, the offices that Parliament has in three provinces. That is the offices that the Parliament uses in order to liaise with the public.
Mm.
But with regard to this aspect, we have, as you had raised in the HFSS, we are not able to put up the advert because we do not have the actual venue. If you do not have an actual venue and you put up an advert, we will be forced to put up another advert, which indicates the actual venue. We have got the areas that must be gone to, which is Guguletu and George. But the question would be, if you put out an advert now, where in Guguletu, where in George? That is where the issue. But with regard to the footprints, insofar as community papers are concerned, we are getting those assistance from the communication, parliamentary communication services. They've always worked with those. They're also using social networks like Twitter and Facebook, also trying to cover as wide as they can. But they do have a footprint, and it so happened that through their projects of public outreach on generally Parliament itself, they'll also assist us through that. So we are working with that. But we just want to emphasize to members that we just need to have the actual venue in the areas that we're going to, and that must be factored into the advert that goes up, so that we don't have to go out on another advert and thereby incurring extra costs.
I hope that answers.
Chairman, it answers it very well, except the concerns that I raised and Honourable Ntunambi has echoed about the short time left for the Western Cape, and we don't even know where the venues are, so we can't advertise, and yeah, that's quite problematic.
All right, that will be solved, Honourable Ntunambi. Okay. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. We're hungry. Thank you.